Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome to the Know Your Gear podcast 313. I had a guitar company reach out this week and they shocked me a little bit, as sometimes companies do and people do. And why did they shock me? Well, what ended up happening was, as you know, I did a video this week. If you guys watched this week's video, I reviewed a Boya Nziki guitar. And of course, I'm very interested in these guitars on Amazon that either are touted as amazing or just shocked by the pricing of them. And usually what I'm really after, so you guys know when I'm doing these videos, I'm not out there to disprove that somebody who said it's great is wrong. That's not even close. And I'm also not trying to say, hey, look, this guitar is cheap, so great, right? It's really, I'm curious to see if the companies are doing what they claim for the prices they claim, okay? You have to understand, one of the most controversial things I've ever done on this channel, in fact, one of the most controversial thing I've ever done on this channel, was when I called out Sweetwater and said, hey, look, I don't think you're doing your 55-point inspection. And that actually started the relationship I have with Sweetwater to this day. They contacted me, and basically, long story short, as you guys know, I went out to Sweetwater and I confirmed how they do the 55-point inspection, including answering the biggest question, which is, if you do the 55-point inspection, how come sometimes you don't get a perfect guitar when you get the guitar? And if you watch that deep dive, it explains why. They get 8 minutes per guitar to do it, and that's just business 101. They can't devote all their time to it. But the reason why I was questioning the 55-point inspection with Sweetwater, the reason why I question things like that is I don't like liars and cheats, and especially in business. And one of my things about Guitar Center back in the day, you know, I was a small mom and pop business for 13 years, and Guitar Center was tough. They were a tough cat because, you know, they would come to your store, customers, and they'd be like, hey, how much is this Yngwie Strat? And back then you're like, it's $12.99. And their Guitar Center's like, they'll do it out the door for $11. And they would. Guitar Center would literally do the guitar for a great price. Back then, you guys remember, Guitar Center used to negotiate like crazy. And man, they were hard to beat. They were running with a minimum of 10% lower cost per item than the small mom hops like us. And if they wanted to, they could go right almost to the bone, almost to what we were paying for a guitar. And you had to make that decision one time, you know, time after time. Do I want to sell this customer guitar for literally cost, you know, to earn this customer's business? But deep down, that's fair. I think that's fair, right? That company has a right to do their best by the customer, and I had my right to do my best by the customer. What I don't like is if Guitar Center was obviously lying about that. They were lying about the discount, which they weren't. They were doing the discount. So when I hear companies say, oh, we do an included setup on every guitar, I'm like, okay, well, setup has different, obviously you guys know, has different values. Some people it could be worth $40. Some people it could be worth $150. Doesn't matter. If they don't do the setup, if they don't do the work, they're cheating, right? They're basically making someone, especially if someone else has to match that. If somebody came in my shop and said, hey, Sweetwater is setting up every guitar. I'm just using Sweetwater in this analogy. Setting up every guitar. Will you match them? And I have to do a setup, which is like a $80 to $100 service. And Sweetwater was never doing that. That is cheating. And I don't stand for that. So that's why, you know, I was really calling them to the mat on that. This is a couple years back. And I'm happy to find that Sweetwater does. They have integrity. They do everything they claim. They make mistakes left and right like everyone else, but they are doing what they claim. So a lot of times when I'm doing these videos of these Amazon brand guitars, and I always call them Amazon brands because who knows these brands? You know, they didn't exist. They don't pretty much exist anywhere else outside of an environment. We live in a world where somebody can literally order 100 guitars from China, ship it to their garage in Kansas, and list them on Amazon, and you don't know what you're buying. And there's nothing wrong with that. By the way, I'm not calling that person out. I'm just saying, as a consumer, you don't know what that is. So I'm always curious to get those guitars in hand and not only see if they're good, but if they are what they say are. And as you guys seen with a lot of the guitars I've reviewed, like Firefly said there was woods on the guitar that weren't there, right? Was that fraud? Was it a mistake? We don't know. But the truth is, they said there was a mahogany body. And clearly, when I sanded the wood off, there was no mahogany underneath. So this week, I did this Boya Nziki guitar for that exact reason. I just want to confirm, you know, is it stainless steel fret? Is it all these things? There was a lot of claims, real roasted maple neck, mahogany body. And in that deep dive, whatever you want to call it, You know, there's a few issues. There was, right? Of course, we see that a lot, a couple fret issues. We see that on an $1,800 Fender now. There was a crack in the neck pocket, which is not great. But, you know, again, why I'm telling you all this was Boya and Ziki, the company, reached out to us. And their response was much different than I've ever experienced before. Their response was, thank you for finding the defects in the guitar, and okay, and thank you for bringing these problems or issues and concerns to our attention. They thanked us for you guys for putting in your two cents in the comment sections. And let's be honest, the majority of it, 90% of it was very helpful. It was like, hey, it's a, you know, for $370, it's a pretty good guitar, but here's some things I don't like. And, you know, there's a couple people who are just slamming them, but they took the feedback, and this is what they responded with. They said, look, basically the guitars that are Amazon are at Amazon, okay? That's where they ship them. They ship them. The guitar that I got came straight from Amazon to me. So obviously no one had an opportunity to do anything before it got to me. So the guitars are at Amazon. That's how this works. So they lowered the price of the guitars $60, which doesn't sound like a lot, except for that's almost 20% off. So they took them 20% off on a guitar that was already marked pretty low. So they did that as almost like a B stock. That's how I'm looking at it. That's not what they said. So I just want to be clear. It's almost like they said, hey, look, yeah, the guitar you found issues. Maybe the other guitars have those same issues. Here's a discount to all the customers. They just did it. Okay. They just did the discount. And then they also put comments in that video, and you can see in the comments in the video, they did it. But also they told us, they said, we are going to strive to fix all the issues you pointed out. And all they asked in return was one little thing. And it was, could you put a comment on the video, they meant me, saying that, you know, they're sorry, not sorry, but they're, you know, obviously this is not, they're not proud of this work, and they can do better, and they are a small new company, and they will do better. And maybe that doesn't feel like unique to you guys, but in a world where I've had pretty much now, especially with a response like that, every kind of response you can have to a review of some sort, everything from a cease and desist letter to a take your video down or else email to a, you know, you name it, to you name it, I've had it. Heck, I even had my favorite response ever, which I'll never say the company, but my favorite response ever was they immediately sent the same guitar I reviewed out to a dozen other YouTube channels. The only reason I know this is one of the YouTube channels happened to be my friend and called me and said, hey, look, I'm sorry, but they sent these out and they basically said they wanted us to counteract what you said. And I'm paraphrasing. They said it very, so, you know, I'm kind of making it sound more nefarious than it could have been. What they said was they didn't tell us what to say. They just want us to highlight some things, which ironically were the things that I was saying was wrong with the guitar as being pluses and stuff. So, I mean, look, there's always a way to respond. And so, you know, and I, for the record, I'll just say 90%. It's probably right. 90% of the companies that I review, whether I work with them or haven't worked with them, whatever, because, you know, it's all, there's all kinds of varieties of guitars on the channel, are very positive, all positive experiences. So I don't want to focus on the negative ones. I just want to focus that I really want this positive experience to have some weight with you guys, like it has some weight with me. I thought that was a very positive experience, right? And somebody even put in my Patreon, I released this to the patrons this week, what had happened. And somebody said, well, they could just give you lip service. They could, but so could everyone else. And no one's ever done that, right? I mean, they, of course, you could lie to me. But I mean, most companies don't even have the will to lie to you about, hey, we'll fix that. They don't even care. Mostly they tell you that you must have had something wrong. Or, you know, it's always like somehow my fault that their guitar has an issue or there's a problem with the guitar. And so, you know, it could be. It could always be my fault. Who am I? But, you know, I just, like I said, I just thought I'd share that with you. I just thought that was a really cool response. I was shocked. So, you know, and here's why I can tell you. When I saw the email, it didn't come to me. They didn't email me. They emailed them, probably emailed the master email to the channel, because it was brought to me. And of course, you know, when I see an email from a company after I've just done a review of one of their products, I'm always like, very rarely is it, Phil, great job. It is. I get that a lot too. But a lot of times it's, you know, this is what you did wrong. This is why you're wrong about what you said. This is what, which is fine because they can critique me back. That's fair. But usually it's some kind of like, you know, you did it wrong or you had the wrong guitar or something happened. So I thought that was really cool. This all stemmed, though, from a question which I haven't answered yet, which is I had a viewer ask me a very interesting question, and I thought that was also part of this story that I should share with you guys. The video was sponsored by Sweetwater and Line 6. And the question I got immediately after the video posted, and I didn't even think anything of it, it just before this question was posted, which was, what did Sweetwater, the question was phrased both ways. It was like, what was Sweetwater thinking, kind of thing, but also why did Sweetwater sponsor a video of a guitar that they don't sell that's sold by another, you know, by Amazon, a competitor? And my answer is, so, you know, I'm telling you the answer right now. The answer is they didn't know what video they were sponsoring. They didn't care. Sweetwater and I have had a pretty great relationship. As you guys know, when I went there last year and they let me run around, just do whatever I want, film whatever I want. They've kind of learned from our first interactions that this audience, you guys, are Sweetwater fans. They know that. They're not dumb. They have analytics. They have Google, man. They know probably what you drink for this morning for breakfast. So they have Google Analytics. They know that you're buying from them, and they know that my viewership is a different kind of guitar nerd than some other types of guitar nerds, right? There's different kinds of guitar nerds, and you are a type of guitar nerd that is really interested in things like, you know, is there a problem with the neck shape, or is there a defect? Not because, you know, you want to be angry, it's because, or you don't like stuff. It's because that you just want to learn more about how, you know, either fix your own guitars or maybe learn about what makes guitars better, maybe eventually build guitars or whatever. So they know that they trust my decisions, what I'm trying to say. So my answer is they had, and I'm this is 100% 100% honest. They had no idea what video they were sponsoring. So what happened with Sweetwater was they reached out to me and said, hey, would I be interested in doing a video of any of these products? And that's how they kind of come to me. And one of the products was the Line 6 Catalyst. And I responded to them as I did. And I said, I don't want to do a video of the Catalyst, but I would love to have a Catalyst, a 60 water, for reviews going forward. And the way it works with Sweetwater and me is it's a paid sponsorship, right? They pay me a little bit to cover the cost of the video, and then they send me the product. So obviously I need it because I need it for the video. And I said, I will use it going forward for at least a year or so, right? Because I like that amp. And, but I'll only charge you the first time I ever put it in a video, right? You know, because that's the only way I can make this make sense, right? I can't charge them every time I do it. There wouldn't be any logic there, but I could say, hey, pay me and I'll put it in a video and use it. And then I'll continue to use it. And over time, people get a sense of the amp, right? And they were like, all right. So it just so happened that's the first video that I decided to do it because of the prices lined up. As I said in that video, I'm going to use the Catalyst now. I'm still going to use the Yamaha THR30, by the way. The reason I was interested in the Catalyst was I really like the idea of matching the price of the guitar to the amp for videos going forward now. So, you know, if I was to review this Gibson R9, you know, I'm sticking it in an Amplified Nation amp, right? Of course, you know, it's like, hey, look, if you're in the market for a $5,000 guitar, you might be in the market for a $3,000, $4,000 amp. However, if you're in the market for, you know, a $500 to $1,000 guitar, I'll use something that's more like my Princeton amp or more like the Yamaha THR10, which I have is like a $500 type amp. And then if you're looking at an amp that's $300, maybe I'll use a $300 amp. I know that doesn't fit everyone's scenario, but it's, I just think it makes more sense logically. And that's based on what I see everybody buying on the regular. And then Avi Boss. I already told you guys, I learned Hooked on Phonics on cassette. I'm kind of not kidding. It kind of ruins you a little bit. I didn't take the whole course on cassette. I like to point out that not only do I have to admit that I learned it on cassette, but I also have to admit that I didn't actually do the whole course. Anyways, so Hooked on Phonics, which was this thing back in the day where you like phonetically sound everything out, really sometimes does not work for you. Anyways, Avi Boss. Avi Boss. He says, would Sweetwater ever do a house brand like Tolman, GC, Samash, have them? You know, again, I can't speak for them. I don't work for Sweetwater. You know, so I'm just saying this, like, I'm telling you, I'm going to shoot from the hip. I don't think that's the right way I'm kind of phrasing this. I'm going to give you my best guess, educated guess on what I know about Sweetwater and what I think the answer will be. And I would bet on that answer. So how will we bet on the answer? I'll bet, I don't know, $200 pedal. So in other words, if I'm ever wrong, somebody's going to have to remember to call me out this day on it. I'll buy a $200 pedal and we'll do a giveaway with it. So if I'm wrong. So the answer to your question. So would Sweetwater ever do an in-house brand? My answer is absolutely not in the version of Sweetwater that exists today. So I'd like to, since it's my put my $200 on the line, I'd like to give myself one caveat. If Sweetwater was to be purchased by another company, not the current company that owns them, not the current iteration that I know them to be, sure, I don't know what happens because I don't know. I mean, it could be Tolman who buys them. Who the hell knows? So it could be anybody who buys them. But in the iteration now, no. And the reason is if you haven't figured it out, I figured it out and I talked to the Sweetwater people about this and they, you know, they confirmed as much as they could with me about my theory, which was I have a theory about Sweetwater and I told them that they seem to do the opposite of their competitor lineup. And I don't mean it like, and I don't mean it because the competitors do that. They just do the opposite. It just seems like that's their nature. So what I mean by that is this. A couple things you may not notice about Sweetwater. One, Andertons does funny videos. They do crazy videos, you know, blindfold challenges and goofy things and crazy things. And if you notice, Sweetwater is not really like that. They're kind of like a straight-laced, serious kind of company. So they don't really go that route. Will they ever do crazy videos? I mean, maybe, because they got Nick Bocott and he's done some crazy stuff. And I'm actually really shocked at how far Nick has gotten Sweetwater to kind of get out of that straight-laced comfort zone. The other thing is Sweetwater really has a fixation with the how they interact with their vendors. And what I mean by that is they carry their vendors very, very well. So whether you guys know, there's a saying in the internet, it's a mile wide and an inch deep. And what that is we've all experienced this. You go to a website and they have every guitar in stock. But you click on it and there's none in stock, right? Because they're only keeping like five things in stock and the rest of the stuff is stuff that you could just order from them, right? That's why they mean it's a mile wide. In other words, it's, you know, when you're looking on the internet, it's like the selection's this wide, but when you look at it really, it's an inch deep. It's nothing there. Sweetwater really does stock stuff. It's crazy. Like if you see a product at Sweetwater from a brand, they stock a big chunk of that brand's product line. Now they run out of stock all the time because they're selling through it, but I mean, they keep the variety in stock. So like a good example would be, I'll just say this. I don't think, Larry would be mad at me. Guitar Center used to carry DiMarzio straps in black, right? So they would carry black. And I think he said once they carried white as well too, but mostly black. And one day we're talking and he mentioned a comment. He said, you know, he goes like red is the second highest selling strap and maybe or whatever. Right. And he was saying, you know, like they could increase their sales by 30% if they just carried red. And then ironically, though, Sweetwater carries every color of DiMarzio strap. So that's the kind of, you know, the way Sweetwater thinks. So first, they carry products very, very deeply. The second thing is they don't like doing competition type product reviews. So if you notice, they don't really pit a company against another company. Now, they'll let the YouTubers, they'll let us do it. But you won't see a whole lot of like Sweetwater creating a video, you know, like a lot of companies do where it's like, hey, PRS versus Schecter, who's better? You're not going to see a lot of that. They don't like to put the brands they carry against each other, even if that that brand is the same, like a Squire versus Fender. You don't see a lot of that. Now, they seem to open, really kind of loosen the reins on that a little bit, but they're still that way. Another thing you won't see them do is compete with their vendors. And I'm not, by the way, this isn't a way to say something is wrong with the other companies that are doing that. I'm just telling you why Sweetwater, or what I noticed about Sweetwater, and then what they kind of confirmed with me, which I told them, I said, I kind of get the vibe that, you know, like a Harley Benton, you'll never do that. You'll never do a Mitchell. You never do anything because you're not going to make a copy of a product you carry. And they're like, absolutely. We're never going to carry a product. They're never going to make a, you know, like a Costco Kirkland, if you guys are familiar with that reference, or a Harley Benton Tolman. They're never going to do that brand line because they don't want to compete with their own vendors. It's not their way. It's not the way they think. And so I noticed that. These are all, by the way, all these things I'm telling you, these are things I noticed and I asked them and they basically confirmed everything. They said, yeah, we don't do versus videos. Yep. We don't do zany videos. Yeah, we don't do, you know, we don't make our own brands and then compete with the companies we carry. We don't do that. Yep, we do carry the lines fully through. These are all the things. So it's not totally unique. There's a lot of stores that should get credit for this too. But I mean, we're talking about Sweetwater, so that's why I'm talking about it. But that's, so to answer your question, would they ever do it? Not in the iteration of Sweetwater that I currently am aware of. I don't see them doing that. I just don't see them finding it. So you know, I'm still not fully understanding why the other companies all do it, because there's good reasons to do it and there's bad reasons, but I'm still not there all the way. I really think in Thoman's case, Harley Benton is the only thing to me is exceptionally different. And what I mean by that is when I think of Guitar Center and Sam Ash doing their in-house brands, I see it exactly as that. It's an in-house brand. Harley Benton, we're all aware that it's Thoman owns them, but I really feel like Harley Benton has done a very successful job at becoming a standalone brand. And here's why I say that. I would, if we're betting again, I would never, ever believe or think that you would see, you know, the Guitar Center brand, brands that they've come up with, or the, Sam Ash, some of the Sam Ash brands, well, actually, there's an exception to that. So hold on. So let me give you my answer. I would never see Guitar Center's brand be carried by like a mom and pop or another store. And the reason I had to stop for a second is because Sam Ash does own Harkey and Samson, and other stores do carry Samson and Harkey. But Samson and Harkey were brands that Sam Ash bought, just like Mitchell. So it wasn't like an in-house brand. I just want to make the exception because I don't want anybody to put it in the comments like correcting me. I'm just doing my own correction right now. So Harkey and Samson are sold by other stores in Sam Ash, and it is owned by Sam Ash. But like when you think of in-house brands with Sam Ash, like they had, like they own Mitchell now, but, no, they don't own Mitchell. What's that? That's Mitchell is a Guitar Center. They own Michael Kelly. Sorry. I have too many M's words. They bought Michael Kelly. So they own Michael Kelly, but it was a standalone brand. But you know, Sam Ash has in-house brands like Carlo Rovelli and other things like that. I can't imagine, you know, a store carrying that, but I can imagine one day walking into a store and seeing Harley Benton on the wall. I wouldn't be shocked at all. I would be, not even a little, because I think that's eventually, I think it will grow. I think there's, because here's why. I think there's a diehard fan base for Harley Benton guitars. I know, because there are brands, Taylor, Paul Reed Smith. I mean, you could say every brand, but I mean, there are just brands that I can just tell you, like Paul Reed Smith and Taylor, maybe Gibson, maybe Harley Benton. Who else? Mesa Boogie. And again, I don't want to single out people, but these are brands I think of. These brands have diehard fans. So in other words, whenever you say anything negative about them, you're going to get pounded on for a little bit, right? You can get pounded on for being, you know, a fanboy of a brand, but sometimes you get really pounded on if you say anything bad about, you know, it's like, I call it mom's cooking, right? No one talks smack about your mom's cooking. Right. So, same thing. No one talks smack about your favorite guitar player or your favorite brand. So, and I think Harley Benton's actually gained enough, notoriety on its own to where there's a fan base for it. I remember in 2018, I was at the last physical PRS event, you know, before they went to the virtual ones. And I met a kid, and I always apologize. The kid was like 20. Like I said, my son's 24. So, you know, do with it what you will. It's a Han Solo Skywalker thing. Great kid. Don't get cocky. Anyways, my point is I met this kid and he was telling me how he stopped me in to tell me that he loved my channel and he had learned some stuff how to fix his guitars and he had 10 Harley Bentons. And I remember thinking like 10 Harley Bentons. And he's like, yeah. And I go, that's like a real guitar. That's like $2,000 worth of guitars. And I said, that's crazy. So I go, so do you like them? Or is it just you wanted a lot of guitars? I wasn't making fun of him, by the way. I want to be very clear. He and I had a very pleasant conversation. We took some selfies and it was really cool. And he was wearing one of my shirts. So I want to say what happened was interesting is I really wanted to get into his understanding the logic here. Because to me, if you have $2,000, I'm not saying you should buy a $2,000 guitar, but he was at a PRS event. But I was thinking like, you know, you'd think like, oh, if you had the money to buy a nice guitar, let's say $1,000 guitar, $2,000 guitars, why buy 10 $200 guitars? And other than maybe you want a lot of different guitars, because you can have a Tele, you can have a hollow body, you can have a, you know, a Les Paul. I mean, that's the great thing about buying inexpensive guitars. You have a variety of guitars, which is, you know, variety is the spice of life, guys. So sometimes it's okay. And he just said he liked them. And he basically was, and he was more interesting to me because he was younger. And he had the story that so many of us have, but especially younger players have, which is the story of, I bought a nice guitar, nice, probably, he didn't say exactly, but I got the impression, nice meaning $500-$600 guitar, and it was crap. And he got it, and it had bad frets, and it needed work, and it was just, you know, right, it was a hell. And then, so he returned it, and he bought a Harley Benton, and his Harley Benton was great. And then he was like, you know, and I'm like, yeah, well, who hasn't been there, right? Who hasn't bought something nice, have it, you know, not work, and then go, well, why did I spend all this money? I'm going to go back to the less expensive stuff. So I think Harley Benton could be a standalone brand for sure. Okay. What else? Okay. Hold on. I know you got some good questions and stuff. So I hope that kind of covered that stuff. I hope. JVH66 says, does ESP make Harley Benton guitars? No. There's few, so you know, there are brands that if you were to say to me, like, does, you know, Schecter guitars make Harley Benton? I'd be like, I don't know. I don't think so. But there are certain brands I know that they're not the builder of it. So they, is Harley Benton's made in the same factory that maybe LTDs are made in? Sure. I mean, factories cross over all the time. There could be all kinds of stuff, right, where there's crossover. But that doesn't mean that it was built by that brand. So as far as I know, ESP is not a ghost builder of any way, any kind of Harley Benton. So there you go. Okay, let's get into the next question. The next question came from Declan. Hey, what's up, Declan? Declan says, I wonder, will Cesar change much at Gibson? He's kind of been the main man for a while. So what Declan's bringing up is, of course, if you guys haven't seen the news, how'd you miss it? It was the biggest gossip of the town. Is James Curley, the CEO of Gibson, is no longer with Gibson. And okay, so let's unpack that a little bit. So as we all know, James Curley was the CEO of Levi's. He took over Gibson, and then you know, he fixed it. We'll say he fixed it, right? And then, of course, you know, there were some fumbles, you know, there were some mess ups, there were some glories. And then, of course, there was a guitar boom. So talk about inheriting the company at the right time. When I mean inheriting, I mean taking over the reins, so to speak. And then the week before last, Gibson or somebody made the announcement that James Curley is no longer with Gibson, right? And they did it in the most corporate way you announce things like that, right? A lot of you have probably had a corporate job and you're like, Tim's no longer with the company. And you're like, is Tim dead? Right? Because it's so vague. You're like, what does that mean? He's no longer with the company. Like, right? But that's kind of the vibe you get. I didn't get that it was bad. You know, they kept it very corporate bland. Cesar is, I hope I'm saying his name, I'm sure I am, it took over. He's the acting CEO. And he's running things until they get a new CEO, or maybe he'll end up being the real CEO. I would, two things. One, I think he'll end up being the CEO. So let's start there. Cesar, I think we'll end up staying the CEO. Two, I hope he ends up staying to be the CEO. I like him. I don't know him. I have friends that know him and they speak highly of him. There are things that I like about him, probably more so than even James, but more importantly, there are things I like about his excitement for Gibson. Look, one of the things that I get to do in making YouTube videos is a lot of editing. Bear with me. It's not very exciting. Like, you know, somebody made a comment earlier, I live in Arizona and I haven't bumped into Phil yet. You're never going to bump into me. I'm trapped in this cave. It's a great cave to get trapped into, but it's a cave, right? I'm editing videos. I'm doing Zoom calls. I mean, it's literally, it's, you know, it's not the life you kind of expect. You know, you don't get to play guitar all day. You actually have to do all this other stuff, so you get to play guitar. But the reason why I tell you that is, one of the things I get to do is talk to so many people in this industry. And what I can tell you is that there are a lot, and I mean a lot of people in this industry, and just, they just love music and guitars like we do. Sometimes more than some of you guys, sometimes less than some of you guys, but most of the time so much, right? And Cesar is, he comes from a private equity world. He comes from the money world. And I think he owns a sports team, right? He owns a sports team as well. And he's got money. And why this is important is because one of the things you want to see is this. You got somebody who's like, look, they've already fulfilled their I make money. He's got money. That's great. That's kind of what you want for something like Gibson, right? I think greed is what's killed Gibson or hurt Gibson in the past. Greed is what hurts a lot of things in our industry. And you can say greed hurts every industry and everything. And we one day maybe we'll talk about that. But we talk about guitar stuff on this channel. And when it comes to guitar, guitar is a passion business. And it's because it's a passion business, greed really, really screws it up, right? Because as soon as you, the artist, the musician, the guitar player, right? As soon as you feel like the thing you love isn't in, literally in tune with you, you feel disconnected from it. And I feel that sometimes. I pick up a guitar and it's, yeah, maybe it's built well or maybe it's built badly, but you feel it. You feel like every decision in this was because somebody only cared about money. And you don't feel connected to it. And you know what? I don't really know if the dishwasher downstairs, if the person who designed it, the company who made it, just has a lifelong obsession with hating dirty dishes. And I don't care, right? I just look at it and I go, it's a dishwasher and it does its job. However, for some reason, it matters to me, and it probably matters to you guys, that the person who it designed your guitar, built your guitar, does have a lifelong, focus on music and guitars. And so I think that's what Cesar represents to me. Somebody who's like, he's got a lot of money. So he's like, he doesn't have an ego that he has to fill. It doesn't come across that way. It doesn't come across that he's going to run Gibson in a direction of let's just pinch the pennies and stuff. Sadly, there's a couple things, and this happens a lot on the show, and I apologize for it. And it's just how it is, guys. I have a lot of friends in this business, and because of that, I know stuff. And because I know stuff, sometimes I'm just not privileged to share with you guys. I'm sorry. It's just how it is. I share as much as I can. I tell you, my life's an open book, but when I'm talking to other people, their lives aren't open books, and I'm sorry. So there are things that I know in the background that are, would, if I was to say them, would help confirm some of these things I'm saying to you about what I'm saying. So like I said, I think he's going to be good for Gibson. Here's what I think is going to happen next. I think he's going to get Gibson to become basically an independent company again. I think he's going to get Gibson back into the just being Gibson again and not being, you know, the held by an equity firm kind of deal again. That's my thought process. My thought process is that he will continue the passion thing. You can see it when he interacts with artists, that he has a true love of the artist. And let's face it, the true love of the artist is why most of us are here. Is because most of these guitars, look behind me. I have the Yngwie Strat. I have a Les Paul. Cause I told you guys this, I'll bore you guys to death with this stuff. All these guitars behind me, they're signature guitars. And if they're not, I can tell you exact John Petrucci, right? Obviously the RG550 is cause of Steve Vai, right? Slash for the Les Paul. I mean, Angus Young for the SG, right? I mean, that's who got me into this stuff. So I think he shares that passion with us. So I'm actually happy about this stuff. So there you go. I think it'll be a better company with him. I did not have any issues because I don't know him. I don't know anything about James Curl. I don't know anything about him, but I did not entirely love all of their decisions that they were doing. Obviously it was one of those things where the decisions before were so bad that every decision looked like a better decision. So, I mean, give them credit for that. But there were certain things that I was like, it'd be really cool if they'd focus on other things. So there you go. I'm really, really, but let me know your guys' thoughts, what you guys think. And if you even care, it's one of those things. I kind of sometimes don't know if we should even care who's running the company. Just we'll pay attention to the results of what the company does. So Sometimes I get sidetracked when I read you guys' comments. Somebody says they missed the lights on the wall. Yeah, you don't like the no more colorful lights. They I'll put the colorful lights back on. I have a switch, it turns it back on. I love it. I always love it. Ian, thank you for saying it. He's like, Gibson guitars are way too overpriced. And somebody's always got to say it. Every guitar is overpriced. I don't know if that's true. The sad thing is, look, all of us feel the pain. Gibson guitars are expensive, man. I don't know. I can't remember. I know I told you guys how old I was when I bought my first Fender guitar. I was 30. Almost 30. Like 29. 29, I bought my first Fender guitar. It was a Mexican Strat. My first Gibson, I was probably 33 or 34. So 34 years old when I bought my first Gibson. I had a Gibson. I told that story before. I took one on trade when I was a kid. But I'm talking about like me buying a Gibson, a one I wanted. I think my first Les Paul was at 34. Why? Because that was the first time I could afford one. Used, you know. But everybody always says they're overpriced. The reality is this, man. You can find Gibsons that are affordable through used. You can find Epiphones too, but, you know, you can always find a Gibson if you look for it. But yeah, as a whole, I can't justify pricing of stuff. I'm sorry. It's a luxury though. So all I can say is it's all going to feel pretty expensive. So, okay. Steven says Gibsons are not expensive to own. I would also agree with that statement. Because they're investments. So there you go. All right. I think we talked about the Gibson subject now. I think we covered it. Is that it? That's pretty much it. So those are my thoughts on the CEO change. Okay. So the next question, I think came from Jonathan. It says, hey, Phil, I love the show. Question, is putting a volume pedal in the effects loop the same thing as running an attenuator? It is not, and it is. And so here's where I would be clear. Let's talk about what it is. It is going to achieve the same result, which is the overall volume of the amp. Volume of the amp will be lower, and especially if you're trying to get the amp to distort a lot, you're going to get that. What putting a volume pedal or an EQ pedal in the effects loop of an amp does is essentially turns that into the master volume of the amp, because it's the last thing that happens before it goes into the power section. Without even showing you an amp, I can get you to visualize it pretty easily. I want you to think about when you plug your guitar cable into the input of an amplifier, right? You're going to go, the signal goes into the amp, right? Well, it's going to go through essentially the gain control if it has that, and then it's going to go into the EQ stack, right? To some degree. And then it'll go into, this is what's pretty interesting, is then it will go to a master volume if it has that. Nope, that's wrong. Then it's going to go through the effects loop. I'm sorry. So it goes in the effects loop, and then after the effects loop, that hits the power section, and that's where your master volume is. Essentially, what you're going to do by putting the volume knob or volume pedal or EQ pedal in the effects loop is it gives you another essentially volume, so you can crank stuff up ahead of that and then use that to bring things down. Why is it different? Well, an attenuator is different because it's letting the actual power section of the amp hit the attenuator before it goes to the speaker, and then you're driving the amp with the power section. So sometimes if you want that power section cranked and all the distortion cranked, you're going to get, some people are going to argue, a truer kind of distortion. I don't really care either way. Okay. It doesn't really matter to me if it makes sense. Some people are going to say, because everybody would say it in comments, that there either way is not really good for your amp. Sure, a lot of things aren't good for your amp. So it's not necessarily bad for your amp either. It's just not good, you know, not good for your amp. But I use both methods. I've used them for years and I've never had a problem, just as long as you're pretty good with it. It's really just about what you want to do. At this point, I have a good attenuator, so I use it all the time. It's just kind of easier that way. But for years, before I had an attenuator, I always used the volume pedal in the effects loop. It was just, again, easy that way to do it. So it's just your choice. So you can choose. There's two ways to achieve the same thing. Really, that's the important thing to take away from this whole thing I just rambled on about. It's really just important that you understand that it's just two different methods to get you to the same place, which is ultimately what merely matters.
We'll be right back. Ever wonder how your favorite entertainers and athletes made it from childhood to the spotlight? Join me, Nashville-based entertainment reporter Jennifer Vickery Smith, as I chat with moms of entertainers and entertaining moms on my hit podcast, Got It From My Mama. You'll hear delightful conversations with moms of everyone from the Jonas Brothers, Luke Bryan, Kelsey Ballerini, Steph Curry, Travis Kelce, and so many more, sharing the journey from a perspective only a mama can share. New episodes weekly as we share the best conversations of family, faith, and fame on the Got It From My Mama podcast.
Okay. I told you, sometimes I shouldn't look at the comment sections because it goes a little crazy. Okay. Okay, Smoky Sound Studio _ Switch says, thoughts on budget 7 strings like the Ibanez RG7421. I love the RG7421. I own 3 7 strings, and I've owned so many over the years, and I have the 3 that I think are... to me, the holy grail 7 strings. I'm an old 7 string player, which means I'm not really into the 27 inch scale, the longer scale 7 strings. It's not my jam. Although I'm gonna say something that's gonna make that kind of not make sense what I just said, but just understand that I really do like the older 7 strings. So I have an Ibanez RG7620, which is just the old school Ibanez 7 string. I absolutely love it because I love that neck. I did a video set. I was like, 7 things you don't know about Ibanez 7 string. In that video, I explained why the neck is different. So the Ibanez I have is a neck you can't even get anymore. And I explained that in the video and even why that happened. But I love that neck and I love that guitar. And to me, it's about the neck. The Petrucci behind me, the Majesty, is a 7 string. That is another amazing neck. And it's a kind of more modern 7 string. I love how thin that neck is. That neck is super, super thin. However, if you get the Sterling, it's not as thin as the USA one. And then I have a Strandberg 7 string, which is kind of a multi-scale. That's why I said it's kind of what I always say. I was going to contradict myself a little bit. That's my favorite 7 string, the Strandberg. I have a video coming. It's unfortunately, like a lot of videos, I put a lot of time into playing these guitars. So in the video, I'm trying to give as much of a versed opinion of the subject as I can. So that, I don't have to, like I said, I told you guys, I'm sick of like doing videos and you do a video and then 2 years later you look back and go, God, that's a horrible video. Cause I don't even think that way anyway more. So you really want to try to put as much as time into it as you want. But I love the Strandberg 7 string. Unfortunately, there's not an affordable Strandberg 7 string. I love the 7421 if that's what you like, but here's what's interesting about 7 strings. And this is a great subject. 7 strings to me is all about the neck to me. That's it. That's it. Nothing else matters. I don't care. I don't care about the pickups. I don't care about the body shape. I don't care about the tremolo. I don't care about anything. It's all about the neck. If the neck is not right, I just cannot play the guitar. And I really think that that is the most important thing with all guitars, which is why I focus almost all my reviews on so much of the fretwork and the neck feel and all that stuff. Notice I'm just hyper-focused on that. If you don't like when I do that, then maybe you don't think like me, and that's fine, right? There's another YouTuber out there that's got a different perspective to share with you, right? Which is great. But me, I don't care how much I love a way a guitar sounds. I don't care how much I love a way a guitar looks. If I don't like the way the neck feels, I can't own it. It just becomes wall art and I'll never play it. It's gotta be, the neck is super important to me. And as I get older, it gets way worse because I used to just have like preferences based on just like, oh, I like this neck because it feels kind of nicer. This neck pokes me, right? Or whatever, right? Like there was always something about it. Now it's physical pain. I can play a guitar, just pick it up and start playing it for 2 hours. And at the end, just be in pain from a position that it made my hand go in. A neck, I don't like necks super thin, and I call it Goldilocks syndrome. I don't like necks that are super thin. I don't like necks that are super thick. Both of them literally cause me pain. I maybe benefited or didn't benefit from this information, but I got to hang out with Phil X, and I got to hang out with Larry Mitchell, and I can go on and on and on, and because I guess I'm name dropping right now of these guys, but it's important that because I think they're really cool worldly guys, and I'm giving you some reference of why this information was valuable to me. These are guys that are slightly older than me, just slightly. And it's just like, you know, when you're a freshman and you get a junior or a senior and they're like telling you like what's going to happen next year when you go in. These guys were giving the heads up like, oh, when you get this age, two more years, this is going to start hurting. The, you know, arthritis, this is the stuff. And you know what? They're right. Exactly. So I'm just telling you, as you get older, the neck is even more so important. That it's comfortable. And sadly enough, I think this happens to tons of guitar players, where I think guitar players that we love, we notice they change, like look at Paul Gilbert, dramatic, right? Used to play super thin necks. Now he's playing chunky necks. I don't know if it's exactly kind of this, but I do know he has tendonitis really bad to the point where he had to put his arms in like buckets of ice after shows. And so yeah, as they get older, they change the neck profiles. They change things about their guitars because like it just happens. And so to me, seven strings are a passion. I love seven strings. You know, I'm think about this. The seven string guitar came out the year I started playing guitar. So I've told this story before where, you know, it's just I fixated on the Steve Vai Universe. It was just this really cool guitar. It was this, you know, it was like the Spinal Tap. This guitar has one more string, like kind of thing. Like, what is one more string? You know, that's got to mean something. And all of that's great. But what I found is sometimes when they make seven string guitars, a lot of companies just make them. And one of the things that companies do that's horrifying to me, and a lot of them do it, especially when guitar seven strings blew up in the market when, you know, when Korn and Limp Bizkit and, you know, everybody was playing a seven string for a minute. Every company just like, we have to have a seven string. And a lot of them, what they did, especially because they were using CAD files and stuff, is they would take the neck profile of their six string and they would just like expand it out. Like it would like just, you know, like a click and like a mouse and they drag the lines out. And I learned this over time. And then the necks are super chunky, right? Unplayable. And it's because, you know, that's why I for a while I learned a little, my secret, what I learned is, and I still kind of feel this way, there's exceptions, but the majority, I'll tell you this, almost every artist seven string to me is fantastic in some way. Because there was somebody there playing it and giving feedback like, you know, like Petrucci, like this would be more comfortable if this was better. And like Vai, this would be comfortable if this was better. And you can tell when you play those necks that are backed by artists that they feel more normal, right? I had this happen. I'm a huge Nuno Bettencourt fan. I'll tell you the seven strings for you. This is a crazy seven string story. So Nuno Bettencourt, huge fan, huge, massive fan of his. I can't even explain it. I have a couple N4s. And one day he played American Idol with Rihanna. And on the video, he does the solo and he was playing a solo. He was playing an N7, a seven string Nuno. I was a Washburn dealer. I called the Washburn rep the next morning and I said, oh my God, Nuno played a seven string. And they're like, yes, yeah, yeah. And I'm like, I gotta have one. Like, can we order one from the custom shop? They're like, you know what? We got so many calls. We're gonna make some. And I go, okay, I want one right now. So I ordered one. And I don't remember, probably 6 months. I don't remember if it was that long. Maybe 6 months later, it shows up. So I ordered it through the store. It shows up. I pick it up. I play it for about 2 minutes. It's so horrible. The neck is so chunky. My hand hurt. It did that thing where I get this pain right here and it goes here from my thumb being in this weird position. And it's because when your tendons, you know, you put your hand in a certain position, you're flexing your tendons the entire time and it kind of wears them out. So anyways, long story short, too late probably, right? I'm playing the seven string. It's horrible. It's just a crap show, right? And I am just deflated and horrified, right? Because I'm like, it was expensive too. I was like, how could this, like my one of my favorite guitars in four, seven string, like the math, my whole philosophy of life is if it's an artist signature guitar, it will be the greatest seven string ever. I just told you guys that. I called the rep and I said, dude, I gotta be honest with you. This thing's horrible. I go, the neck's too chunky. And he goes, yeah. And I go, I've met Nuno. I've shook his hand a million times. I go, he's not that big of a dude. Like, how is he playing this chunky neck? And he goes, I don't think he does. And I go, what? And he goes, yeah, this is the story Washburn told me. So I'm just telling you the story. So if it's, you know, if it's wrong, it's wrong because they told me the story wrong. But this is what Washburn told me, the representative of Washburn. They said that when Rihanna played American Idol. They made them play to a backing track. They made her like it's the, you know, recorded track. I don't know if it was a pre-recorded voice, but it was pre-recorded band. And so they wanted Nuno to kind of come forward apparently and play the solo of the song. But of course he had to mimic it because, you know, it's a backing, it's all pre-recorded. And so Nuno, a music store, I forgot which one, there was a couple, there was like some Funky Monkey Music. And then there was another one, Boogie Street Music. If you were Washburn fans, you'll know those two stores were huge Washburn dealers and were always dreaming up N4s and all kinds of stuff. They apparently dreamed up an N7 once and apparently gave Nuno one as a gift. So they ordered some from the store and gave him one. So I guess Nuno never really used it. But for the video, for that show, I guess Nuno said, this is what Washburn told me. Nuno was like, well, I might as well play that 7 string because I'm not really playing it. And, you know, and then probably whatever happened next, which is then they made some N7s and I got one. Nuno probably never knew. Never happened. I mean, you know, and so the irony is it was a horrible guitar because Nuno never really even played it. So that's a long way of saying how important it is that the neck be right, especially on a 7 string. But take the important part for all of you is the neck needs to be right for all guitars. And I will tell you, I have tried to fight necks. In other words, like make myself play a neck that I know it's not right for me, but I'll keep playing it. And, you'll pay the price. So like I said, if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. And just go with the fact that maybe that guitar unfortunately isn't right for you. And that happens. There are guitars that I absolutely love, but the necks are just so bad, different. I don't want to say bad, like quality, but bad, like for me, they're not right for me. I can't do it. So yeah. There you go. Now, the dumb part about that whole thing, because I got to share everything, including the dumb part, is I was so heartbroken and so stupid, I sold that guitar for probably, I remember I bought it at dealer cost. I probably got dealer cost. I don't remember making any money. I don't remember losing money. I don't think I did. I think we threw it on Reverb or eBay and threw it out just for, you know, and of course, now I bet you it's worth a fortune. Should have just held on to it, maybe even sanded the neck, something, I don't know. But like I said, I remember like that was deflating. That was probably the most deflating guitar I've ever, to this day, that I can ever remember opening from a box and playing and going, oh, as someone who absolutely loves the N4, I was just like, I can't believe it's so, the neck was so chunky. It reminded me, if you ever guys have ever played any of the old BC Rich 7 strings, when they would make 7 strings, their necks were so chunky, it just didn't make any sense. That's what it was like. So, okay. Let's grab another question or subject. We'll see how this goes. Maybe refresh because it's not showing me. It's only showing me. Okay, you guys are popping back in now. All right, here it goes. We'll start with Declan. Declan says, hey, Phil, if you cut a nut for 10s, can you go back to 9s or do you need a new nut? Concerned about low E being 4,000s difference. Different. Sure, I understand. Right, I understand. Look, no. Most companies, I'll tell you right now, from the factories, just being at factories, as you guys know, if I'm at the factories, I'm asking questions, I'm taking pictures, I'm talking. From the majority of the factories I've been to, most of the factories are cutting the nuts for 10s. It's just like standard practice. In fact, one company in particular cracked me up because they used to cut all the nuts for 10s and ship all the guitars with 9s. Now they ship all the guitars with 10s, but that's what they were doing because here's why they do that. Okay, it's important to know that to do it, but why they do it. The reason why almost all factories will cut a nut for 10 to 46 gauge strings, even if they ship that guitar with 9 to 42s, is because if a customer has if the nut is cut for 10 to 46s and you put 9s in it, there's probably going to be no issues. Okay. So, you know, Declan, like I said, a 4,000s, it's just not enough issue. You won't notice it. What technically would happen when you put the 9s in it, technically, obviously, the strings are smaller in diameter, so because they're smaller in diameter, think of the groove in the nut like a V, just to think of it this way. And, of course, the ball, think of the string like a ball landing in that V. Obviously, the ball's smaller, goes further down into the V. So, again, the strings would be a little closer, right? Which is, this is important, which is why not only do they cut them for 10 to 46, they also don't cut them very deep, which is what I'm actually showing you guys when I show you all those videos and every geeky stuff where I'm like, see, they cut the nut slots, but oh, they left a little room. There, see, if you were to switch to nines, that room would actually disappear because the string would sit a little lower in those slots. And that gap that I'm showing you in most cases from going to 9 to 42s from the 10s would be fixed. I don't know if the word fixed is right, but it wouldn't be an issue. Now, why is that important for the factories to do this? Is because if they do it the opposite way, they cut 9 to 42s and you immediately get the guitar, which some companies still do, 9 to 42s. If you get the strings and you cut them off and you put 10s, what happens is the nut slots are not cut wide enough, right? Technically, because they're sitting a little higher, and they can bind in the nut, and then you'll have tuning stability issues. And so it's just a lot easier as a logistics reason for, because remember, the whole, a company, besides making a great product for a customer, let's just boil it down to, is trying to get no one to call them with problems, right? I mean, essentially, that's what you're trying to do, right? As a company, you're trying to send a product that obviously, if it fills the customer's needs and wants, but also, you know, doesn't make you have them call you and have issues. So you do, sometimes you see companies making decisions that are like, hey, look, we get this concern, we get this call every time we ship it this way, we stop shipping it that way. So Declan, to answer your question, no, 10 to four, 10 to nines, you're fine. Nine to tens, you're fine. But nine to tens, you're fine. Tens to nines, you're fine. But I just told you the issues you'd have either direction. I don't worry about it. I use, for lack of a better way of explaining it, I always tell everybody, worry about two gauges up or two gauges down. So if you go from nines to 11s, you might have issues, that's for sure. If you go from 11s and nines, in other words, if you're cut from an 11 to 52s or 11 to 48s, and you go to 9 to 42s, you might have issues, and vice versa. It's usually two. Same rule applies to adjusting the truss rod. Some people are like, oh, if I change from nines to 10s, do I have to adjust the truss rod? I'd say almost 9 out of 10 times, no. The tension difference is not strong enough and not big enough to cause the neck to move enough in most cases. I mean, you know, maybe if you have a super wizard neck and super thin and it's a humid day. But no, if you go from 9 to 10s, you do not need to adjust the neck. If you go from 10s to 9s, remember, follow the rule, 11s to 10s, 10s to 11s, right? If you're moving one gauge direction either way, you shouldn't have a problem. This also, this is what's great about this rule. Not only does that rule follow for the nut and now the neck adjustments, it would also follow suit for intonation. Do you have to change? Is the intonation going to be out if you go from 10 to 9s? It can, just like all those other things. It could go wrong, but 9 out of 10 times, I'll say for intonation, let's say 8 out of 10 times. Just for safety, let's just make it 8 out of 10 times for everything. 8 out of 10 times, you will not have issues. Okay. And then somebody says, and forget 7s. Well, you know. Yeah, so the rule applies, see? So in other words, if your guitar was set up for 9s, the neck was adjusted, it was intonated, and the nut was slot was cut for 9s, and you said, hey, can I go to 8s? I would say almost yes, right? Like that same rule applies. I'd say you'd have an 8 out of 10 chance of not having to adjust those things. But yes, if you went from 9s to 7s, that's the 2, right? You went two stages, two steps, whatever you want to call it, right? Two gauges, right? If you go up two gauges in any direction, be prepared to make intonation adjustments, neck adjustments, or nut slot adjustments of cutting the nut or putting a new nut. I'm not saying it will happen, but be prepared for that as a problem. So some fixes for that. For those of you who are probably like, oh, it's great. A lot of you are like, oh no, right? I hate it when I'm making people more nervous. Ways that if you're something you're nervous about, some people will tell me, like when they email me questions, they'll say like, I'm really nervous. Like if I go, I want to go from 10s and 9s, but I'm really afraid that I'll make an adjustment or, you know, a problem with the guitar, I'll change something. And the question I get is, if I go from 10s and 9s and there's a problem with the guitar, if I go back to 10s, will it correct itself? It can, but sometimes actually, no, the problem seems to follow it because you've already done it. But it can. But what I can tell you is this, if it's something that makes you nuts, and especially if you're concerned because either A, you don't want to spend the money on the tech to fix it, or B, you don't have a tech to fix it, don't forget hybrids. So in other words, you can do 9 to 46s and get, you know, right? Don't be afraid of hybrid strings. Hybrid sets are a great way to get you 50% of the way there, literally. 50% of the strings will be what you want. So that hybrid sets are a great way to get into there. So for instance, if somebody says, hey, I want to go from 9s to 8s, you could do a hybrid set, right? You can do 8s to 42s. So that way there's some suggestions for that. Litface says, hey, Phil, did you check out that Gibson? He means from last week when he said there was a Gibson that looks like a Badlands guitar. And yes, ripoff wasn't the right word, he said. But if there was a connection, inspiration via Badlands, it's cool and flattering. Absolutely, like I said, I don't know if I did see it. Here's why, Lippe, obviously, like I said, when I timestamp and index the show, I always look at what you guys talk about. I spend some time either that night, if I can, tonight, later on, or if this week, the weekend goes, I look at it. I saw a guitar that had black and white stripes, and it were kind of, I don't know if that's what I was supposed to be looking at, but that's what I thought I saw. And again, I think it'd be, here's the best way to sum this all up. Cause again, this is back for those of you, if you didn't see last week's show, he was stating that Gibson had a guitar that looked like it was inspired by a Badlands guitar. Where do you see the next Badlands guitar? You'll obviously figure out what it's inspired by. So that's inspiration. Let's all call it inspiration. Maddie Two Hats says, hey Phil, do you think Epiphone will ever make a DC Junior in TV yellow? Why do they skip out on some of the more classic Gibson models? PSU Rock. Hey man, thanks for saying I rock. That's really nice, kind of you. I don't know. Sometimes I can give you kind of like a guess of why they do that stuff. I will tell you, sometimes with Fender and Gibson, both of them have the same issue, ironically. Fender and Gibson both have an issue that I've seen over the years when they have, anytime they're dealing with Squire and Epiphone, those two sublines, and it writes the lower price brands. One of the issues is, remember, they're not building their own guitars. Sure, they go there. Sure, they train them. Sure, all those things are correct, but they don't build those guitars. So sometimes when it comes to colors, they have problems with the factories getting the colors right. And you can understand this happens all the time. I have friends that are product managers for all kinds of companies, including a friend who was a project manager for Fender for many years. They'll tell you like, yeah, we had them make Daphne blue and it came and it was gray. And we're like, this is wrong. Do it again. And like, nah, it's too light of a blue. So maybe they can't get the color right sometimes overseas with that factory. That does happen. It's hard to get the colors right and they're not happy with the prototypes. The other thing that can happen, I'm gonna give you three options because one of these three could be possibly the reason why. That's one. Two, the second thing that can happen is that because they're using polyurethane and Gibson is using nitrocellulose lacquer, they can't get the color right. In other words, it doesn't look right. In my opinion, and it's just, mine, some of you guys, are going to have different viewpoints based on your experience. And that's all it is, an experience of things. Sometimes when I look at price-friendly guitars, which, right, because you guys don't like it when I say cheap. When I look at price-friendly guitars, one of the things that I can detect from 10 feet away, like when I'm looking at a guitar, is when like a perfect example to me, like TV Yellow, Butterscotches, definitely Burst colors, right? Any kind of Cherry Burst colors. There are a bunch of colors that they originally were done in nitrocellulose lacquer and they look really beautiful. And when I see them in poly, especially on inexpensive guitars, they just stick out immediately, like I said, 10, 20 feet away. I go, that's definitely, like, I'm not going to be tricked. Like, I already know that's an inexpensive guitar because of the color. It just doesn't look right to me. For perfect example is, although I love the way they look, the Made in Mexico Sunburst Strats, Tobacco Burst Strats, whatever you want to call them, they immediately always look too nice to me because they use that cellophane finish. And it's so glossy, right? That it just, and the color is so vibrant that it looks too good. I mean, that's what I'm saying. I like it because it looks great, but that's one of the things that are wrong with it. It's like, as soon as I see it, I go, well, that's definitely not like a expensive USA one because it looks too nice. So sometimes they can't get the color right because they either can't get it right or just we're using different types of materials, right? The third thing, which is also a big factor for this, is sometimes the companies aren't dumb and they just know. Well, I don't want to say they're not dumb, but you know what I mean. Sometimes maybe they're greedy. Maybe I should say greedy instead of dumb. They know that color holds value or that product holds value, and they hold it back, because for that reason, That's exactly it. They just know. They just know that this is the holy grail of colors or specs or models, and they hold it back. And then I said I would do three. I'm going to do one more because there's actually another thing. These are all scenarios, by the way, that I've seen happen. So I'm not just guessing. I'm guessing at why they're doing this, but I'm not guessing at these things. These things happen. The fourth thing that also happens is the product manager. Remember, these companies, you see them probably as Gibson as a company, like a person, maybe. Maybe you see Gibson as like Gibson has been Gibson for 100 years. But in reality, Gibson's been 50 product managers, 50 different people with 50 different personalities and relationships with their mother and their father, right? And guitar playing skills and everything. And they're going to have different feelings and ideas about what is successful and what is cool at Gibson. So that's what's really funny is that sometimes, like, I've had this happen where I talk to a project manager, or product, I don't know why I say project, product manager at a guitar company. And I'll go, man, I really always loved the blah, blah, blah guitar you guys did. And he goes, I hate that guitar. And, oh, yeah, my boss, it's always their boss. My bosses are like, yeah, we should do that. And I'm like, no, because he hates it. So, or she hates it. So, so that's four reasons why they could be not doing that guitar. It probably doesn't make you feel any better, but at least maybe she has something to think about. Grumpy, my guitar says, thanks for the hat. Oh, you got the hat? He goes, it looks awesome on me. Is it this hat? I don't, like I said, I remember just last week, she's like, I sent Grumpy Mike a hat. This hat, I thought I saw somebody ask in the comments, like, what's the hat? These are stitched, beautiful looking hats. I have a bunch of them, different styles and stuff that I'm wearing them just like, trying to get the feel for it soon. Hats are coming. Basically we have all the prototypes of the hats. It's just, which one do we want to go with? And I'm sure we'll offer three or four different types of the hat and stitching, and that's coming soon. Like I said, the merch is almost ready to release, which is all new and improved. See how vibrant? Like, here, I'll take off my head. Look at that. See how, I don't know if you could tell, see how vibrant the colors are? And like I said, that's all stitched, right? Like how good that looks. And this is one of those, see, it's fitted, no thing on the back. But there's different ones. You got to understand, like, I want the quality to be there. So the logos on these new merch is just so vibrant. I like the blues. I like the gold. Little weird thing is a lot of people think this guitar, the logo is like, that's a wood. I don't know. I can't do it back. That's wood and that's blue. That's not what it is. This is actually a gold brass color and that's blue. I don't really care, it's, if you guys are all like, hey, it's a wood headstock and a blue body, that's cool. But it's actually, it's like brass. It's like a brass color. And so the irony of this is when we had some logos made and we did some merch in the past, the colors, they were so not so bright like this. You couldn't really tell. Now you'll be able to tell. So I'm telling you not so much that it matters that if you get one now and you're like, wow, that logo is a lot more intense, especially on the headstock. It's because that's what it always was. If you look at the high-res versions of this logo, the headstock was always like a coppery brass gold, like it's metallic. So. Yeah, Dougal Dog, awesome. Phil McKnight, YouTube presenter, dump truck driver, hat model. That's me. Well, if there was ever a haircut that was made to show off hats, it was mine. So, let's do my ears fit underneath it? I don't think so. I don't know. I don't think my ears go under the hat. Is that a thing? Okay. Grumpy Digga says, is there a new geek hat that I can order Australia? I feel bad for all you folks in Australia. I don't know how to explain what it is. That is, I don't know how to explain as I stop saying. You guys, I know I made the comment once that, everything there is super expensive, right? If a guitar here's $100, it's like $5,000 there and stuff. And here's what I do know. My wife, I like I said, my wife handles all this stuff all week. My wife took something to ship to Australia this week. And it was a gift. It was some merch that she was sending to somebody. And they let her know, I think it was the post office, let her know that the taxes, the fees, or whatever you want to call it, we don't have that here. You know, I mean, not that. We're like, you know, Europe, they have VAT. Whatever it is they're charging you, these taxes. We have them, but not like you guys. Was, and I'm not making this up, the person who was getting the, I think it was a hat, maybe it was a shirt, the person getting the product, the taxes, the fee, whatever they were charging that person was more than the cost of it and the shipping. And so I'm, you know, we're working on it. It's basically, my wife's working on it. She just, like I said, she doesn't want to create an environment where it's like, you, who wants, she doesn't want you to buy a $25 hat and pay, you know, $30 in taxes on it or whatever the heck is happening there. So I feel for you, all of you with these crazy fees. We do get them too here in the US, but nothing like you guys, nothing, nothing like that. We have a whole other way we get screwed here. You, that's just your own specific way of getting screwed. We have our own. Okay, phase, I'm going to say phase. Surveys, thoughts on the 2019 and on Gibson 50 Standard Les Pauls. They're too heavy for me. I can't own a Gibson currently. So this is an interesting question. You'd think it would be innocuous, nothing, right? What do I think of, you know, 2019 Ford Gibsons, right? Well, here's the irony. I have a 2020, I'd have to look at the video if you guys know, ES335, I bought that new. So that was a 2020 or 2021, it was during COVID. That solely, that one guitar is the only Gibson I have that is post-2019. Now, why this is important is because since 2019, I have bought five Gibsons, right? One, two, three, hold on, four, five, six. I bought six Gibsons. And none of them, except for that ES335, I don't know why I'm saying it like that. One of them is post-2019, and it was a semi-hollow ES335. I cannot own a 9-10-pound guitar, and so that's the problem. I just can't do it. They're just too heavy. So I ended up, so you know, I'm so focused on what it is I want. I have... Oh, can I show you guys? I guess I can tilt the camera a little bit. I'm gonna go this way. There's a gold top Les Paul right there. That's a gold top that I bought from Carter's Vintage Guitars. I believe that's a 2005. It might be a 2006. It's just under 8 pounds. It's super light. It is weight relieved. And I paid probably, well, I can tell you this. I paid for it a little bit, and I mean a little bit, less than a brand new one would cost. And I also had to do some upgrades to it to get it to be what I wanted, which is, you know, I put a new bridge on it, a new pickguard, because there were some things were worn out on it. So new knobs, new pickguard, stuff like that. And so after I did that, it cost as much as a new one. And the only reason I did it, the only reason I bought that Les Paul is because I didn't want a 10-pound Les Paul. So my R9, I think I did buy that brand new, and I did buy it during COVID, but I believe it's a 2016. It's just been sitting in a store. They had two of them, like, sitting side by side, brand new. So what do I think of them? I'm sure they're great. I really couldn't even tell you if I picked one up. I'm sure I have picked one up and played one, but I just, it's not on my radar. I look at the demo shop on websites. I look at Sweetwater constantly. You know, I did, not recently, but I look all the time. And every time I look, they're 9 pounds, 10 pounds. If you can find a light Gibson Les Paul right now in the newer models, it's on the high end of 8 pounds, which is probably doable for me. But I can't do it. It's just too heavy. So if that's not a concern from you, I think the quality of the things I've done is great decisions, and go with it. I really am not a big fan of the weight relieved. I do have a theory. So, you know, I actually presented this as a theory to one of their competitors. Basically my theory is that when 2018, when they made the decision to not do the weight relieved, I think that was, it was right after the bankruptcy, right? They're going to, hey, we're going to make Les Pauls like we used to, which is a good idea, and improve the quality, which was a good, really better idea. But they also decided not to do the weight relief thing. I think that was a mistake. I think they couldn't see and they can't see that mistake because I think COVID happened and then the guitar boom happened and everybody's buying guitars. But I think from everything I know in this industry and everything I've learned from Sweetwater being there for 8 days and going through everything they do and how they sell guitars. And so, you know, Sweetwater weighs all their guitars. They even now, if you guys aren't aware, some of you that are freaky about wanting your guitars not to be heavy like me, know this already. The rest of you don't. Not only does Sweetwater disclose all the weights, which others, mom and pops do too as well, but Sweetwater lets you sort now by the guitars, how heavy they are. So you can sort by alphabetical, newest, you know, listed, in stock, price, and of course by weight now. So you can sort them out. So I really think it's a thing. A lot of us, especially those of us who can buy a Gibson, let's face it, if you can buy a Gibson, you probably have some silver hair somewhere. you know, it's not a young person's guitar. And it's not because I don't think young kids don't want them. I think kids want them. I don't know. If you're a kid and you have a Les Paul, you're just lucky. But you're not the norm. The norm for buying Gibsons, expensive things usually come with people who have lived a little while. They've raised their pennies. So the older folks that are buying the Gibsons, man, they got shoulder problems. I got a shoulder problem. They got it's heavy. That's another thing. So I think Gibson is going to slowly learn that that's not the best decision, there. So, we'll see. What I'm holding back from you guys is that I told you guys I'm working with a company right now. It's still moving. I don't want to tell you guys publicly because I've told you, I feel like every time I say something publicly on the channel about a company I'm working with, then it gets jinxed and it doesn't happen. And then you guys, whatever happened with that? And I'm like, I don't know. They ghosted me. So I'm not going to talk about it, but what I will say is that, I told a company that I think this is my theory. I think the company, I feel like they heard what I said. And actually from that and some other information they got from artists, customers, and some other, industry insiders kind of agree and they're working on something. So that's all, but that's it. So that's my answer. I love the guitars, but 10 pounds, 9 pounds. This is tough, man. It's a tough. I've said this before. The best playing sounding Les Paul I've ever played in my personal, my personal one was one I had on the channel for years. It was almost 12 pounds, 11 and a half pounds. Man, it sounded great, but I got rid of it for one reason only. It was just so heavy. I never played it. And then it just, it's one of those things. One day you realize look, for a YouTube channel, this is beautiful wall art. I think it adds to the experience. You're sitting here watching me talk. Who the hell wants to watch my face? You can look at these beautiful guitars. This is something to look at. There's a reason why I like having these on the channel. It's something I get to share with everyone. And so there's spending some time on the walls and it looks great. But deep down, I don't want these guitars to live on the walls. That to me is the worst thing that can happen to them. Right? I want to play them. So when I don't play guitars, I kind of find a way for them to go away. So there's my answer on that. Hey, and if Gibson ever hears this, bring back Weight Relief and send me one to review. I don't have to give it to me, but I would love to review one. Let's see. Avi Boss. Wait, what was the other name that was like that? Oh, was it Avi Boss? The one I messed up. I already answered the question earlier. Okay, it wasn't two. Thank goodness. Mr. S says, how's the Evertune testing going, Phil? Thanks. So much good news for that. I can't talk about any of it. Just know. So stoked. So stoked. So thank you for the super chat. And know that super chat is not wasted. Soon. More information soon. Kirby Craft says, hey, Phil, thanks for all the content over the years. I just bought an Aria Pro 2 SB1000 Super Bass. Do you have any experience with this bass or any other kind of Aria bass? I don't think I've ever actually played an Aria bass. I might have, seen one in a store. Maybe one came in my store on a trade once. Like I said, my first real guitar was an Aria Pro 2, a guitar that I loved. I love Aria Pro as a brand. But no, not specifically like the basses. Just I'm familiar with the brand and I like the brand. So, there you go. But specifically on that model, anything experience-wise, I've never experienced it. Voodoo Fist says, hey, Phil, does getting a pleck job on your guitar mean that you'll never have to crown a level of the fretboard again? Pros and cons to a pleck job. Sure. Perfect question. Great. For those of you who don't know what that is, a pleck job is a machine called the pleck, and it basically crowns and levels. So first of all, it doesn't crown anything. Let's just start there. I should take that back. A pleck machine does one thing, but it does it really, really good, and it levels the frets. So what it does is it basically, they input the information of the exact guitar that you have, which has all these like predetermined measurements. Think of it like, generically, think of it like GPS for the guitar's fretboard, right? It has a GPS, it has a map of the fretboard. It knows exactly that guitar's fretboard. So think about this. You can't just stick any guitar in a pleck machine and push a button and go, pleck. It doesn't work that way, right? It's got to talk to satellites and space and stuff, kind of, really. But anyways, it actually has a, they do programs, and so therefore they know your exact guitar and what it should be. And then what happens is then the pleck machine levels your frets. A human being then crowns your frets and polishes them and finishes the setup. So sometimes I've heard people, like I did a video where I bought a Squire from Sweetwater. It was and I had it plecked. And it apparently sold a gazillion pleck jobs, is what the Sweetwater guys told me. I don't know. They never told me anything, because remember, it wasn't a sponsored video. I just did it. And of course, they were like, oh, that was really cool. So, you know, I think I maybe have told this. And if I have, I don't think I have. So you might get a little tidbit on that video. So, you know, that video idea was a video I presented to Sweetwater. I actually went to them and said, I have this great idea. I'd like to do a video of a pleck machine. And they said, oh, cool. We'll fly you out and you can video our tech doing the pleck machine. And I said, oh, look, I mean, hours of pleck footage. I have videos of the G&L pleck machine. I have videos of the Frames pleck machine. I have videos of people explaining the pleck machine to me. I said, it is horrible video. I said, it is loud. It is annoying sounding. Okay. It is boring as hell. And no one understands what it does, because every time I hear somebody even tell me what they think it does, they are wrong. So I said, here's what I know. The saying is the proof is in the pudding, right? So if we pleck a inexpensive guitar and it plays great, that means the machine did something. So like Gibson plecks their Les Pauls, their guitars. But to me, if you get a $3,000 guitar shipped to you and you open up and it's plecked and you go, it plays great. And I'm like, well, of course it plays great. A lot of people put time on it. The question is, does an inexpensive guitar play great? So my idea for the video to Sweetwater was, why don't we pleck a Squire and then compare it to a Fender Strat? And the Sweetwater guy's very nice, but that's one of those things I told you earlier about. They don't really like comparative videos. They don't really like to do videos where we compare things. Now, they let me do it independently, but they're not going to let me do it, because they don't want to. They like their relationships with their vendors, and they respect their vendors, and they don't want them to be upset. I said, there's no conflict here, because if the Squire does great, that's Fender and Fender wins. And if the Fender does great, Fender owns Fender and Fender wins. But I understand what they're saying. So it died on the vine. And then probably about 5-6 months later, I was, you know, it was COVID. I was bored. I was tired. And I wanted to do a video that was exciting. And so I just bought a Squire one night, probably got 2 glasses of wine, bought a Squire and had it plecked and just did it that way. But here's the important part of the story. So in that video, what you have to understand is this is how it works. The machine now will level all the frets. The human person then will crown them, polish them, and do the setups. So when somebody says to me, hey, I had a pleck done and there's all kinds of problems, like, oh, this is an issue. Well, I'm like, right, because the machine isn't perfect. Because remember, it's whoever's programming or putting the information in the machine, they can actually input the wrong information. Think about this. You could get somebody who actually puts in the wrong type of guitar. Maybe they put in, you know, a Fender, you know, American Strat when it's really a Squire. I mean, it's that specific. It has to know the exact guitar, the model, the neck, the profile, all that stuff. But also keep in mind, somebody's hands are all over that guitar afterwards. And so it is fallible. The whole concept really of a pleck, and there's always, and you understand, because sometimes I have to deal with this as a thing on YouTube. I'm telling you my experiences with pleck machines, not the marketing copy. Somebody can be reading what pleck says. I love pleck. I love the company. I think they do great work, But I mean, you understand, like, some people are going to tell me, like, no, Phil, this, and they read the market copy. I don't care what they claim. I'm telling you what I've experienced with this. The machine is essentially a tool, just like a power sander, just like a CNC machine, just like a drill. It's just like any tool that's designed to help a human essentially do something that's really tedious, boring, and sometimes because it's tedious and boring, they can make a mistake. It obviously makes less and less mistakes. The word is less mistakes, not no mistakes. A Plex is not a perfect setup. It's a setup that has less mistakes. Almost guaranteed it has less. I really believe that. Somebody asked me once, and they're not asking me now, but somebody's asking once, you know, who do you think would do a better setup, a professional luthier or a tech or a Plex machine? And I don't want to answer that question because I want to answer this question. Who could do 100 setups? And at the end, if you graded all 100 setups, who would give you a better percentage of setups? The Plex machine every time. I think we don't even need to physically test that. I think if we did a video testing that, it would be the dumbest thing ever, because I think any human here knows if you had a genius mathematician add, 100 problems and a computer do 100 problems, who's going to give you the best results over average? It's probably gonna be the computer, right? So same thing with the Plex machine. So to answer your question with the Plex, keep in mind, all it's doing is leveling the frets and then somebody crown levels them. So what does that mean? Nothing. It doesn't mean anything. So to answer your question, will you have to do it again? Yeah, if you wear spots in your frets will have to be leveled and crowned again, of course. It doesn't do anything to protect the frets. It doesn't, you know. So like if you were to Plex stainless steel frets, I would be shocked if you ever had to do anything again, but that's not because of the Plex machine, that's because of stainless steel frets. So to me, if you buy a guitar with stainless steel frets and you have a Plex, I'm going to assume you have a pretty bulletproof guitar. One thing also about Plex machines that are nice is if you get a guitar that's Plex and it's a problem, because I've heard people, and I've had people send me videos and photos of guitars that are not right, you know, that they claim they're Plex. Keep in mind, I'm always like reading an email. I don't know this person, right? They could just be sending me a jacked up guitar and say it had a Plex. But I've seen where a lot of people have claimed that they've had Plex jobs and they weren't very good. What I have experienced with Plex jobs is usually they're pretty good. I'd say 95% success rate with what I've experienced. And when it's off or when it's wrong, it's so subtle that, to be honest with you, you should be able to either correct it yourself or take it to any somewhat skilled technician and have them get across the finish line at that point, because the heavy lifting has been done. In other words, the leveling has been done. Once your frets are all level and your neck set and everything's set up, and once that's all done and the nuts cut right, that's essentially the obstacle. Polishing frets and stuff and is not the hardest part. Can says, machine doesn't mean 100% accuracy all the time. See, that's what I said. That's why I said more, though, right? I think we agree more. I agree with you, by the way. Can, we're on the same thing. So a Plex is not a perfection. It's not end-all, be-all. The one of the things that I don't like, and that's why I always kind of talk the way I do about Plex machines, is Plex machines are very expensive, not only to purchase, but to maintain. They have service contracts. They're very expensive. I'm not going to accuse anyone because I have no evidence, but I'm going to state this as something I have concern with. Plex machines are so expensive to maintain and keep going that I find that so many companies, it feels like they're trying to sell it as this perfect thing because they really need to sell it, right? It needs to be sold. The service. It's a good service. I like it. Like I said, if you gave me an option, this is the important part. If you gave me an option, if I called Sweetwater tomorrow and I ordered a PRS, and they said, hey, we can ship it straight out of the warehouse, or we can run it through the Plex machine as a courtesy, I'd be like, well, yeah, Plex it, right? I would absolutely do that. I wouldn't go, no, you're going to ruin it. I would totally be fine with that. No issues whatsoever. But again, a Plex machine is an expense. So essentially, it's a very expensive setup that should have good results. And I think it does most of the time. But, you know, like somebody also asked once, can a tech do a job as good as a Plex machine? And the answer is absolutely. Like I said, and kind of going back to what I said before, I think a good guitar tech, a good luthier can do anything a Plex machine could do. But I think a Plex machine can do it more consistently. Because setups aren't so much hard as they are Like I made a joke a couple days ago. This is true. I made a joke about mowing a lawn isn't hard, but it's not easy either, right? Same thing with doing a setup. It's not hard, but it's not easy. Nothing that's tedious that you do all over and over again is easy either. It's easy either, right? I mean, sometimes the boredom of something you're doing is enough to make it hard. That can, trust me, when I'm filing frets and for 20, 30 minutes to an hour, I mean, sometimes I'm like, it's not hard, but there's a lot of things I would love to do with that time. Okay. All right. We got to go to the next one. Raphael says, Eastman guitars. Eastman guitars, made in China, high-end quality guitars. They're kind of like the benchmark for proof that China can make high-end instruments. To me, when I think, and you're just saying Eastman guitars, and that's the only statement you're saying. So I think Eastman guitars, I think Shiji, I think those are the two high-quality made in China companies making high-end guitars. One thing about those companies is, and this is the important part, and this is where I always kind of want to, I always talk about this. You know, I believe that you can make a great instrument anywhere in the world, period, period. no exceptions to that. And I believe maybe some other companies around the world are guilty too, but I believe it's mostly US companies that have created this false narrative of, you know, China can't make a good guitar. Vietnam can't make a guitar. Indonesia can't make a guitar. You know, we have them do our imports because they can't make the guitar as good as the U.S. Not only is it outright incorrect. And here's why. I've heard those same companies behind closed doors tell me, oh, we can never let everybody find out about this. We had the factory build us this one. Look at it. And it's so good. They we were like, who would buy our U.S. ones? That's a true story that happened. But my point is one of the things I don't like is that the people, because it's people, the people who tell us that the import guitar is not as good as the American USA made guitar are the same people who set the standards for that guitar. And they outright set the standard lower than the U.S. guitar. Right? So I don't understand. So they'll go, yeah, they always get, everybody says the same thing. Like for an Indonesian guitar, it's really good for what it is. I'm like, yeah. Could you imagine if they didn't restrict that factory from making the guitar perfect? I mean, what if they did do the full carve? What if they did do the right woods? What if they did do the right materials? What if they did write put the right pickup specifications in it? What if they didn't do a cheaper bridge? What if they just did it the same way? You know, right? To me, one of the things is my pet peeve. I have very few pet peeves. This is one of them. I kind of feel like we're done. I'm done. And I hope a lot of you two are done. And this is why, like I said, I want to give, especially a lot of people like to give a lot of hate, which is, there's, like I said, we don't talk politics here, but I understand there's why there's some issues out there emotionally. But a lot of people like to give a lot of hate for Chinese-based companies. What I mean by is, like, I can do a video of an Epiphone and there'll be four comments about somebody doesn't buy, I don't buy guitars in China. But if I do a video that same week about a guitar company that just happens to have a Chinese name or the company is from China, I get 50 comments about they won't buy from China. So my issue isn't that I'm trying to defend anybody or anything. What I'm trying to say is that what I would really like to see is the same guitars made in different factories and just let the economy of scale and the economy of the world dictate pricing. So in other words, right, I get it. Cheaper labor overseas. I get it. Sometimes less OSHA, you know, right? No OSHA, right? All kinds of things. Look, I'm not for that stuff or against it, but at least let it play out fairly. In other words, let a Music Man Sterling be exactly like a Music Man. Let it have stainless steel frets. Let it be the same carve. Let it have the same, put the same pickups in it. Even if those pickups are made overseas, make everything the same. And then go, here's a guitar for $5,000 in the US and it's $900 made in another country and they're the same and you decide, right? But right now, some people say, you know, the USA ones are better because they are. They're specified sometimes better. And sometimes they say they're better just because they're made in USA. There's all kinds of opinions out there, I'm sure. But as someone who's ripped apart these guitars, and not even as a guitar tech for repairing them for years, just some as a YouTube channel who's just pulled apart hundreds of guitars and look at them, each year it's getting harder to understand what I'm seeing. I feel like sometimes I'm just seeing exactly what I just said. It's like, oh, this guitar has issues. Why? Because they were probably told they had to make 2,000 of them within so many days, within so much time at this price. And because they dictated all that stuff, this is what you're seeing as a result. But they could have made the guitars exactly or better. And now we're seeing sometimes what I'm seeing, and I think you guys are seeing too, is we're seeing the inexpensive import guitars are actually gaining momentum. I will tell you this. This is a horrible thought in my head as a guitar fanatic who's someone who's also obviously I'm prior service. You know, I own a small businesses in here in the US. I'm a proud American. I'm sorry if that offends people. Here's the thing. As someone who's proud of my country and me, I obviously want us to do well. That doesn't mean I want anybody to do badly. It just means I want to do well. I want my country to do well. What I will tell you though, that is interesting to me to watch is, if I were to ask me in the last 10 years, just 10 years, are US guitars better than they were 10 years ago? My answer is they're not. But I think almost every import company is better than they were 10 years ago. And as someone who's lived this world of, you know, watching the car industry do this and other industries do this, where all of a sudden the imports, which were considered junk and inexpensive because they were junk, eventually what I saw in those industries is happening in our industry, which is those companies are getting sick of it. One thing behind the scenes you guys might not see, because I get to talk to a lot of people, especially overseas, is there's a lot of companies popping up overseas where essentially these are the companies that are building the guitars for the US manufacturers. And they're kind of sick of making cheap guitars. They're just like, you know, they have pride too. They're not, you know, they're guitar fanatics too. They're not all just dudes who are like, I make blenders and guitars and whatever people pay me. No, there's some people who are like, I grew up on, you know, American rock and roll, and I love this music and I love guitar. And my greatest joy was to build a factory and make guitars. And I make guitars for these companies, and all they have me make is crap. And the first time I ever had that conversation was interesting. The second, third, and fourth time, it became something I started paying attention to, which is how many times I was hearing this. Yeah, we make the guitars for that company during the day, but we have a night shift that comes in and makes our guitars, and they make them better, and they make them cheaper, and they ship them to the US. And the reason why they're doing it, and this is why I said sometimes the US companies need to pay attention to this, because before it was an impossible task. It was impossible. If you were a company overseas, and I don't want to pick a country, so we'll just say, you know, country, whatever, right? And you were building guitars, let's say just 20 years ago, could be 10 years ago, by the way, but 20 years ago is safe. 20 years ago, you're building guitars for a US manufacturer. And the US manufacturer is like, hey, look, this is how we want them spec'd out. And you're like, you know, deep down, you have the same pride as everybody else on the planet who has a job and wants to do a good job. You're like, hey, we can make them better. And that company's like, no, just make them so that they're at this price. And then you're like, well, their dream is like, I'd like to build my own line of guitars. Well, the question is, how would you do that? Well, first, you would go to the NAMM show and you would spend, back 20 years ago, you would spend $50,000, $100,000 to have a booth, fly your crew out there, get guitars, have dealers come to you, right? In the NAMM show, present your products to them. Hope that they saw you down in the basement, because you would be in the basement of the NAMM show. And I'm not even making that up. For those who've been to the NAMM show, you know I'm telling the truth. And you'd hope that store would see you, and hope that the store would buy 10 of your guitars, $100,000, and hope to sell 10 guitars to maybe 10 dealers if you're lucky, right? And then you would learn the hardest lesson in life there ever is in this industry, which is as soon as those dealers sold those 10 guitars, the big brands, the Fenders, the Gibsons, the Paul Smiths, the Ibanezes, the, you know, you name it, they have reps. They're in their stores. They're going, hey, you're a little down on our guitars. Let's get some more in here. And so you have to hire a rep, and that rep, you have to pay them per diem. They have to drive in a car. They have to stay in hotels. They have to stay at the La Quinta and eat at Denny's every day. And they have to, they have to go to these stores and sell, and you have to pay that person a commission to get your guitars in stores and keep pushing and get in ads and do all this stuff. And that was the only way to do it. And here's why I'm telling US companies you have to pay attention, because now all you have to do is make the guitars, ship them to Amazon Fulfillment, send 20 of them to YouTubers, and then bam, you sold 1,000 guitars. And that's why I'm curious. That's why I'm doing deep dives, because I want every guitar to be presented as, this is what I see as someone who's been working on guitars for 2 decades. and make your educated decision based on this. Give your experience, tries, you know, do it for yourself. I'm not here to tell you anything. I'm just going to show you what I see, why I see it, and then you figure it out. Look, as I said, as someone who collects guitars, look what's behind me. They're all collectible guitars. Everything behind me is some collectible guitar. But if your goal is just quality guitars, that gap is closing fast, and it's going to be those companies I just talked about. Soon, I think you're going to see a wave of no-name companies doing great things. And that's why I'm also testing it, because as much as I'm kind of like I'm cheering that now, there's also the fake fraud of that too, which is people basically claiming things, right? Because again, they can claim things. They can go, oh, we'll make the same guitars as a company in the US, and we're going to give it to you $300. And actually, they're doing damage. I kind of gave the other side of that story earlier in the show when I was saying that basically I want everybody to be honest and have to be held to account for this. One of the things that's really problematic is that when import companies lie, okay, because they're a liar, they can lie too, just like the US companies. When they lie about their product lines, they actually cause another problem, which is when I have a person tell me, they look at a guitar and it's a solid piece of mahogany and it's got a maple neck and it's got, you know, frets and exotic stains, right? Stained in the nitrous lacquer, and it's got custom wound pickups and a brass bridge, and all the components are legit, and a $190 case. And they go, and they say it's $2,000, and I say it's $2,000 or whatever the price is. And then somebody goes, that's ridiculous. You could get that same guitar for this price. And I'm like, you can, and sometimes you can't, because that other company is also lying. That's what you have to pay attention to. Yes, sometimes it's the US company full of crap and they're overcharging us. And sometimes it's the import company lying because they're not giving us what they promised for the price. So that's why, like I said, you got to do your best to hold everybody account. This is why it's great. And it's not just me. It's all you guys. You got to do your own reviews. You got to put your reviews on. That's why, if you notice, I love reviewing anything from Amazon. And just so you understand, and just so it comes sometimes, like I said, I tell you guys all the time, honesty, I don't know about honesty. I always know about bias. I just want you to know what my bias is. Everyone's biased. I hate the term unbiased because it doesn't make any sense to me. You're biased. What is the bias? Here's my bias. If you click a guitar, if you watch a video of a guitar that I reviewed from Amazon and you click it and you buy it, I can get 1-2% of that sale. And I've already told you how Guys Affiliates work, so you know that all the other things you click to, I'll get a percent of that too. But I get, Amazon gives me on average 1%. Okay. Maybe 2% rounded up. Sweetwater is more than double that. And other affiliates that I have are even more than double than Sweetwater. So you got to understand. So as an incentive, it makes more sense to me to push the guitars that are from the affiliates that are highest, right? But the reason why I tend to push a lot of guitars from Amazon is because when you buy them, I feel confident that if I recommend anything to you and you get it and it's not, you know, because I don't know, because they're a fly-by-night company, right? I mean, I feel pretty confident that if I review a Paul Reed Smith or an Ibanez or even a Fender, as much as I criticize Fender lately, I feel like whatever I get, you're probably going to get some version of that. But when it's a company I've never heard of and I'm like, this is a pretty cool guitar, you should check it out, I don't want you to be like, that's not what I got. And they wouldn't even answer my emails. So I know if you buy from Amazon, you know, I know you're protected, because Amazon, you know, has a good return policy and stuff. So that's why I do that. And for those of you like have horror stories about that too, sure, I understand there's horror stories, but I'm just giving you my incentive to do that. So there's my answer to that, whatever that is. All right. We're wrapping up. We have, I'm going to say Kurtah. Kurtah says, hey, looking to get a P bass. Any thoughts between spending money to get exactly what you want up front versus two, going cheap on an instrument and spending on Plex setup, electronics upgrades, and to make it what you want? Okay, this is a great question, and I love answering questions like this. First, the saying that I love is, buy once, cry once, right? So basically, spending a little bit more money to get exactly what you want up front is the absolute best answer, in my opinion, every time. You will, if you do not buy exactly what you want first, you will eventually buy it anyways, and that path is the more expensive path. However, that is only if you know exactly what you want. Like, for instance, I have a Warwick bass that is custom made. It is amazing. It is never going to be sold. I am never going to sell it. In fact, I will tell you right now, if I ever sell my Warwick bass, one of two things will happen. Either Warwick has done something horrific to the world, right? Maybe, I don't know. Just trying to think of ideas. Or more, I've lost the feeling in my hands and I can't play bass anymore. And even then I might stare out of the bass, on the wall. The reason I tell you that is because I've always wanted that bass. I knew I wanted it. It was custom made. It was everything I've been thinking about for 20 years-ish, right? I'm trying to do the math. Like, you know, yeah, no, 20, at least 20 years. Because it was before, think of this. I've been wanting it since before my son was born. And I think when I got it, my son was probably 17 or 18 years old. So there you go. So buying that and committing to it, see what I'm saying, is like, if you know you want it, buy what you want. Even if it's expensive, just wait. You'll find the deal. Wait. Waiting is the key. You'll either find the deal, find the money, find the trade. Something will happen. Get what you want. There you go. If it's what you want, if you know it, 100%. If you're not 100% sure what you want, the other option that you're offered is perfect, which is get something, mod it, learn, figure out what it is that you like. Think about modding is modifying stuff is, I like to think of it as education. Some people look at it like, hey, why would you put $400 worth of stuff in a $300 guitar? I look at it sometimes as someone who made a living off doing it and like you learned it. That's education. You know, will you make a living doing it? Probably not. Will you save yourself money one day? That money you spent, does it have a point of reference to, you know, does it have a point of where it returns to you? Yeah, of course. Education always returns to you. Investing in yourself is always a great idea. Absolutely love it. I like the idea of modding. So, and getting something unique and cool. So that's my answer to you. If you know what you want, get what you want. If you're not 100% sure, do the mods, make it unique, have some fun, enjoy. And if you learned anything from my video series about repair, it's always about learning how to do as many mods as you can and then return them back to stock when you get rid of it, right? That's the one flair I brought to the internet. I'm sure there's some of the, I don't want to take credit for it. I'm sure there's other cool channels doing too. I mean, I know there's great channels that are way more talented than me doing repair videos. That's not a question, okay? Be doing it before me, doing it after me, doing it during me, they're better. The one thing I brought was the sense of, as someone who charged people to do repairs for many, many years, I came at YouTube with this idea of like, well, I want to share with you all the ways I saw people lose money. I really never communicated that, but if you watch the videos, I think you've all figured that out. It's like, yeah, mod those pickups, but don't get rid of the old ones and make sure you put them back when you sell a guitar off. Because as Guitar Max, which is a great channel, said once, he once made a comment that was so amazing, it should be on a t-shirt if it's not now, which is basically find someone who spent a ton of money modding their guitar and buy it because that's a deal, right? And I can exactly tell you that he's 100% right. When there's the moment where I didn't feel connected and there's a moment where I feel connected. Here's what I mean by that. Somebody brings in a guitar for trade. They say, hey, I have this beautiful Epiphone. And I go, cool. And it's worth $350. And they go, oh, but I put 57 classics in it. Lock and tuners. New Tone Pros bridge. New electronics. And I go, great. Now it's worth $360. Right? And they'd be like, what? And I'm like, that's what it is, buddy. They would trade it in. Lose their money. And I think, oh, poor bastard. Now, this is where it hurt. And then there was the customer who brought in a guitar and had me mod the crap out of it. And then 5 months later going, you know, hey, I got the guitar. I'm just not bonding with it, man. So I'm going to trade it in. And I know because I sold them the parts. It was $300 in parts and, you know, $150 in labor. So $450, and they lost it all. So, you know, I thought when I was starting making videos, I thought, is there a way I can actually communicate how to not be that guy or gal? That was a guy. Let's face it. It was always a guy in that scenario. Because like I said, it wasn't my ideal way to make money, make a living. I didn't want to like mod people's guitars, you know, as a tech and then have them lose all the investment that they paid me. That wasn't the goal, but it happened. And so if I could save somebody from that, I feel like that's a nice thing to do too, I guess. Right. So that's it. And then we have Jared who says, hey, I saw Pliny on tour the other day and all of the bands were awesome. I'm going to have to Google what Pliny is. Lots of improv. Now I got to look because it's one of those things like either I'm just not going to know or I know what it is and I'm So he's a guitar player. How do I not know him? Let's see why. We have to share. I'm going to, okay. So he's an Australian guitarist and songwriter. He began his career releasing music under the name. Oh, come on, really? It's not gonna let me see the rest. Well, that's there it is. What did he release the music as? Oh, is he playing with Steve Vai now? Is this guy? No. Australian guitar and songwriter. He began his career releasing music under the name, I can't even pronounce it, Halcyon? Thanks, work on Hooked on Phonics. Before switching to use his first name, Steve Vai described him as the future. Ah, well, that's a compliment. So I'll be checking him out this weekend. So first, before I answer anything you got in your question, let's just start with thanks for exposing me to a new guitar player. It's one of the coolest things you can do to a fellow musician is suggest another great musician to them. A great musician, not another like me. I just mean another musician, a great musician that I like, not like I'm another great musician. Anyways, says lots of improv between five or so guitarists from all the bands. I don't watch Adam Neely, but his band's performance was stellar. So Adam Neely, I met Adam Neely twice. And I was versed. All I knew about Adam Neely when I met him was that he was a big time YouTuber and he had some cool videos that I saw and they always got massive views. And, you know, I knew he was smart and he was into music. He did a video that I love called The Millennial Whoop that I thought was really interesting in the idea that I was like, I learned something, especially about one of the bands that I love, which is Shinedown. And they were kind of in the focus of that. And, super nice guy, super smart. He's like one of those, you know, he's one of those Adam Neely. And again, like I said, I don't know him. I just met him briefly. Like both our conversations combined were probably 5 minutes and they were 2 years apart probably. But what I was going to say was both times talking to him, he's the kind of musician that you go, why didn't I do that? Why didn't I learn all that stuff? Right? He just knows so much music theory and music. And he has such a passion for it that it's like, I always think I have a passion for music. And then I meet somebody like that and I go, oh yeah, I'm like the rookie. I'm going to work on it. So, but thank you. I'm going to check out that artist. And then those guys, I'll put a link when I index this to his music and stuff. So you guys can check it out too, if you're new to him as well. Okay. Let's wrap these up so we can start our weekends. We all float here. Says, hey Phil, trying to intonate a bridge like an Ert headless. The note is sharp, but the saddle can't move back. Yes, please watch my How to Intonate video. I'm hoping you haven't now, because if you did and you're having this problem, which is the biggest mistake people make when intonating a guitar is obviously you're following the rules of moving it back and you're moving it forward. And the problem is you're like, oh, now it's sharp, right? And I said in that video, you have to stop. Everybody kind of keeps going down the road and they go, oh, my saddle's backed out as far as it can. It won't intonate. Stop, pull it forward, measure it out again, and start again. You have to understand that the tuner is not the only thing factored in here. In other words, sometimes we will just focus on the tuner, just really just start again. Okay. It's that easy. Just trust me. And if it happens again, you back it up and it's going and you back it up and you still have a problem, go to center again, do it again. Right. Now that being said, always make sure that it's a new set of strings, right? So make sure you're using a new set of strings when you're doing this. If you're using the original strings, I would probably go ahead and good time to try new strings because that could be a problem. If it's an old set of strings, always maybe change the strings. That can be a problem as well. So believe it or not, bad strings are, and this is again from experience, dozens of times people brought in guitars saying, hey, I can't get this guitar to intonate. And then literally the only thing I did was change the strings, check it, and I make a quick adjustment. I go, it's done. And they go, How did you do that? And I go, yeah, first thing I do is you got to change the strings. It's like, I'm sorry. It's just one of those things, you know, you could have a bad string. There's all kinds of factors that can be simple. So those are just some simple suggestions that I suggest you try. And then keep in mind also, like I said, Ert, I think makes great quality guitars, but they also make really fast production guitars. They're a new company and they could have put your bridge in the wrong position. You would be surprised how many times that happens with all kinds of companies. Right now, I know someone watching right now is laughing that I just said that. Okay, so it's always nice. It's my first time doing an inside joke on the show. Bruce Long, thank you for the super sticker. Damien says, hey, Phil, on single coils, why is there so much more treble when you turn the volume to 10, even with a treble bleed? Well, hold on. Is there a way, I'm thinking right now, hold on. Is there a way to cap your volume at 8, even if the volume knob is maxed out? So even with a treble bleed, treble bleed is not the fix. It's not a 100% fix. Okay, so I know what you're saying. So in other words, like, let's go with this way. The volume's at 10 and you're having a lot of high-end frequency and you're like, this is no good. You back it off a little bit, even with the treble bleed, but it's warmed up, right? It's not as bright, okay? That's fine, because that's, even with the treble bleed, that's what it's going to do. It's going to warm up even with the treble bleed, right? Just think of it without the treble bleed, it would just warm up even faster, right? Faster not being timed turn how fast you turn, but just sooner. It would happen sooner in the turn of the knob is the best way, I guess, I can think of that. What I can tell you is a couple fixes that you may want to consider right away is, since you have a reference point, so let me use this as an example. Let's say I have a guitar and I have your problem. I'm playing the guitar, the volume's on 10, the pickup's too bright. I turn it to 8 and I go, oh, that's the sweet spot. What I would first think to do is put it back to 10, because I now have a reference of what it sounded like at 8. I would lower the pickup, okay? Especially the treble side first. In other words, but you know, both sides, but just lower the pickup a little bit and try to hear if it goes right to where it sounded with 8, because that's a big deal. Because keep in mind, the closer the pickup is to the strings, the brighter it's going to be by definition, right? So I would try lowering the pickup. That's another easy fix right there. Before I would try to figure out how to get your knob to stop at 8. I know what you're saying. You're basically saying, hey, can I, you know, I know you can move the knob from 10 and back it off to 8, but you're saying you'd like to, when you're full forward, you'd like it to sound at 8. I think lowering your pickup's going to get you close there. That's what you got to do. Keep in mind, the pickup's distance is sometimes, well, actually think of this. Pickup placement, in my opinion, is more important, whether it's the height of the pickup or the place in the pickup from the distance from the bridge, right? How far and close it is. The pickup placement in both those directions, sometimes in my experience, has had more to do with the tone of the pickup than anything else, right? So if we were to write a list right now, a checklist of things that make pickups sound a certain way, it's the type of wire, how much wire is wrapped around them, the type of magnet, right? How much of that magnet, because remember, there's different, you know, different sizes. The type of materials, the type of wire, I mean, all this stuff's factored in, right? Whether it's potted, whether it's not potted, whether there's a plate on the bottom or not, all those factor in. Then, of course, the distance where you set the pickup and, of course, the position of that pickup, all those things factor into the sound. And I would actually say that the positions are going to be more dramatic than sometimes anything I can do with the pickup. So if somebody says, hey, I want this pickup a little bit brighter, just a little bit, sometimes raising it just a little bit is better than changing a magnet or changing even the type of wire or any of that stuff. So there you go. Mm. You guys, this is funny. I'll grab a couple of questions before we go, but I'm going to end on this note that you guys are saying. A lot of you guys are making Spinal Tap references. This is a funny Spinal Tap reference story for you guys. I saw Spinal Tap in my early teenage years, 20, you know, 20. When did it come out? I can't even remember. So I'll give you a reference. Because I didn't see it right when it came out. I saw it right after it came out. Oh my God, it came out in 84? Yeah, I didn't even know, and I saw it much later. Okay, so I probably saw Spinal Tap in 1990. That'd probably make sense for me, right? Somewhere in 91, 90. Here's what's funny about Spinal Tap. It's the dumbest thing to ever say, but it's 100% crazy and true, and so it's worth saying. I watched it with friends, and I remember laughing so hard, you know, the guy with the cucumber and the tinfoil, all the jokes. And the most famous joke, okay? Well, the most famous joke is, you know, the sustain, right? This Les Paul sustains. But the most famous joke is, this goes to 11. I didn't get the joke because I had a Fender amp and it went to 12. I'm not kidding. I got that the joke, he's like, it's one louder. I'm like, it's one less louder. I mean, I hadn't really been, I'd been barely playing guitar, and I had, you know, I got, you know, like I said, I had an amp, but it was like, oh, actually, I shouldn't say I had a Fender amp. That's actually not true. I had a Fender copy amp. I had an amp that copied a Fender amp, and it went to 12. The knobs went to 12 like a Fender amp. So I just remember going, I just didn't get the joke, right? It never occurred to me that, like, you know, oh, it's one louder. I mean, I got it, but I didn't laugh. And then anyways, later it was funny, but I always laugh going, so when somebody, so now to this day, whenever he goes, it goes to 11, I'm like, and Fenders go to 12. And that's too louder now. Okay. So anyways, let's move this back. Says, Mr. S says, hey, young punk and hardcore types play Epiphones. Reverend is supporting more punk bands. Bad Cop is the latest. Okay. Reverend is supporting more punk bands. Okay, that's cool, right? So are you trying to say that Reverend's moving in on the Epiphone action, right? That can make sense. I think that's smart. To me, Reverend's got a lot more to offer than Epiphone, in my opinion, right? I mean, you know, you see this with the Fender guys. The Fenders guys have talked about the fact that at Coachella and all those places that essentially younger bands are playing a lot of the offset style guitars, the stranger looking guitars. They're not playing the Fenders and Tellys as much. So I think Reverend is one of those brands that falls in line with a lot of the newer music that you see out there. I would see where they would find a place faster than Epiphone. I think it actually has, I don't know. I'm really curious because to me as an old, you know, guy, I look at some young players and I would think to them, Reverend has got to be a premium brand. See, I think it's so easy for everybody's so cavalier about like Paul Reed Smith and Gibson is like, you know, premium brands, you know, and of course there's the boutique brands, but let's be clear. That's, you know, like, you know, Nags and all that stuff. But when I was a kid, I've said this before, to me, a premium brand was Ibanez. That was a premium brand. Because to me, it was just so much better than what I had, and all the players that I was interested in at that moment were playing them. Makes sense to me that if I was younger right now, Reverend would seem like an expensive premium brand to me. You know, I've reviewed them. They're fantastic. We're not talking about quality. On quality lines, I could throw out 20 brands that are great qualities. We're not talking about just quality, right? We're talking about perception. I think Reverend is perceived as a premium brand. And I could totally see that. And I could, and it's unique and interesting looking. A lot of cool things. I have a lot. Like I said, some of the best reviews, you know, if you guys, that's what's great about doing the kind of formatted, you know, why I started formatting the review style videos is, and formatting meaning having a first, you know, like this is a start point, middle point, end point. The reason why I started doing that was for this reason, so that if you ever went and binge watched any old videos, you know, you're just like, you can almost like, it's better than versus videos because you can go, like, oh, wow, that video, that guitar did bad. What did the brand I like do? And then you can go that one. And now you have a comparative because I kind of put it through the same testing process. And I'm trying to keep refining that process. But Reverend does some of the best. And when I think of companies that have killed it in the videos, Reverend, some of the best reviews I've ever given, some of the best accolades and tests I've ever done is Reverend guitars. So, yeah, I could see where if I was playing, especially if I was playing like, you know, punk rock and stuff, right? And I liked that, you know, an Epiphone. I think I'd prefer a Reverend over an Epiphone. Absolutely. You know why? It does everything. Because again, you know, especially in that kind of music. Remember, you don't want the pretentious thing. Funny story happened to me last night. Yesterday, I went to dinner with my wife. And we went to this restaurant. I'm only telling you because my wife thought it was funny. We went to a restaurant and we had a glass of wine and we ordered salads. And while we were there, I was showing her a guitar I wanted and it happened to be a BRS. I was like, this, I'm thinking about this guitar, right? And, you know, and of course my poor wife's just like, you know, she can't even have like a nice dinner with me. She's got to hear more about guitars. And I'm showing her this guitar and this young man comes up and asks if he could take the salads away, the salad plates away. And we're like, yeah, sure. And he goes, and he sees my phone laying on the table because I was showing it to her and I laid it down on the table and he sees the guitar and he goes, oh, guitars. And I go, yeah. And he goes, I love guitars. And cool. And I go, oh, cool. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, oh, and he goes, I think he asked me what kind of guitar it was. I don't remember if he did. And if he did, I said it was PRS. And I said, yeah, what do you think of this top? I was showing him this beautiful top. And he goes, that's really cool. He goes, not probably good for metal though, and stuff like that. And I said, no. And he goes, well, what do you, he goes, you probably don't play metal. He's like, what do you play? Blues? What do you play? You know, I go, dad rock. And he laughed. And I think he laughed. Actually, he probably laughed too hard. Now I think about it, screw him. No, I'm just kidding. He was a great kid. I said, he laughed. And he probably laughed because he was thinking dad rock, but he didn't want to say it. And I didn't say it because I thought he was thinking it. I just said it because I'm like, when I think of PRSs, I think of dad rock. I have PRSs. When I think of PRS, I think of dad rock. So what I'm trying to say is when I think of Reverend, I don't think of dad rock. I don't think of metal, right? I think indie, I think cool. I mean, that's the vibe of it, right? So there you go. So some of the crap that you guys listen to me talk, I feel like I'm just sitting here pontificating about the dumbest things. I hope somebody finds 5 seconds of joy of this. Randy, thank you for the super chat. Let's finish the show up right now because we've gone on for a while. And I think I have the last question as it refreshes. I just have to refresh because sometimes you guys do something and I can't see it unless I... Okay, so I'm going to assume this is the last one. This is Mukbang Fatty says... What's up, Mukbang, by the way? He says, how many units... He's not the last one, by the way. He's the second to last because it just refreshed. How many units would somebody have to order for a Korean manufacturer to make a new guitar design? To get a guitar built in Korea is extremely hard now. You got to understand, there's a reason why a lot of these companies left. Not only is it very expensive to build there, you got to understand, building a guitar in Korea is not much different than building a guitar in Japan. Not much. So it's not like you're going to be buying affordable guitars. It's not like it's like, hey, I'd like to buy 200 of those and here's a check for 85 Pop-Tarts. It's not going to be super cheap like it used to be. So it's pretty expensive. Second thing is there's a reason why it's expensive now. It's because they're really known for making great stuff, which means they're busy and they have a lot of good companies coming in to get their stuff. There's a reason why Chapman leaves them. There's a reason why PRS left them. Like I said, PRS, the company admitted it on the show why they left. They said it was expensive and, you know, and the quality really wasn't much higher than Indonesia and it was getting more expensive. I kind of agree with both those statements. I think it's not much higher than Indonesia, but of course, if it's a lot more expensive, I can see why that's a problem. So to that point, the answer is if you were to go to World Manufacturing, you could probably get away with 26 units. Okay. 26 guitars. That's about. Back, I think you probably could go to companies and get 14 overseas and start with as low as 14 models, but it's probably about 26 units now to get them to actually make a guitar for you. Keep in mind, though, that's if you can find a factory in Korea that has the space to do it. Space means time, you know, they fit you in. You know, that's the biggest problem now. So to be honest with you, if you're actually thinking about this, like, you know, because a lot of people do this, they're like, hey, I have an idea for a guitar. I'm going to make it overseas, right? Domestic yard, not domestic, you know, going outsourcing it. You really want to think about where your money, you know, is going to do the best, not so much to get the guitar cheap, but to give the best product for the best bang. And of course, have the best, find a factory that has a need for you because... So, you know, there's a lot of horrible stories I can tell you. I won't tell you now because the show went too long, but there's a lot of horrible stories I can tell you about people who have built guitars overseas and, you know, they waited 6, 7, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, and then they we're not going to build them because they were busy doing other, like if they get bigger orders, they're taking the bigger orders. You know, you get backburnered out real fast. So, but 26 units is what it's been for the longest time. There's a guy named Hap. He's kind of like, his name is Hap, like Happy. His name's Hap, and he's pretty much the guy you go to if you want to get guitars built over in Korea. At least he was. I don't know. I remember some of my information gets outdated because of COVID, you know, everything. Some people I haven't kept up with, some people I have. But if you're asking about making some guitars overseas and you have an idea and you like to build, I would definitely consider Indonesia or China. And so that's just realistic. If you're going to be realistic, there you go. The Slick Nick says, hey, Phil, I just got a 5150 Iconic 112 combo. What are your thoughts and opinions on them? I would love, love to try that amp. I love everything about that idea, that amp. But you know, they're just not, you know, I'm not on their radar as a company to send the amp out to review. They didn't have any deal that I know of with Sweetwaters, because Sweetwaters usually how I'll find a way, you know, to get one sent out. Buying one, it's my problem is I love the amp, the idea of it. I love the everything about it, but I don't really need it. And, you know, how do I just, amps are tough, man. They're tough. They're not like the guitars where if I could buy a guitar, even for the channels you guys know to review, I can review it and then it sits somewhere dormant and then eventually we sell it off. The amps, man, I got to sell them immediately because otherwise I'm tripping over them in here. So, but to answer your question, I don't know much about it, but I really, really want to. So there you go. I will tell you this. I'd love to say like, hey, thanks for suggesting. It means I want to do it, but I already wanted to do it. It's an amp I really, truly like to get on the channel and check out. So maybe if I can figure it out, like I said, figure out something, I'll either figure out, you know, I don't know, but it's one of those things. The downfall is I think the EVH guys don't really consider me because I think I'm blacked out like the Fender guys. In other words, when I say blacked out, I'm just not on their view. They don't see me, or they don't like the channel, or probably I always like to say they don't see the channel. Just because you guys see this channel, remember, they could be watching YouTube all day and I never come up with the recommendations. There's a lot of people making good content out there. They don't need me. All right, guys. On that note, I'm going to let you guys go and do more important things. Till next Friday. I'll see you guys next Friday. As always, I just want to thank you so much for your time. Till the next time, know your gear.